Okay. Okay. I just felt it would come.
Someone's just going to come.
No, I already said that even that speaker already spoke with the community. Can you please take your seats now? We are going to start now. Please, the members of the forum, if you can all go and occupy your seats. And everybody sit down so that we will call this meeting to order. The fourth meeting of the seventh session of the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues is now called to order. Distinguished members of the forum, distinguished observers, friends, ladies and gentlemen, this morning, we shall continue with item 3 on our agenda, climate change, biocultural diversity and livelihoods, the stewardship role of Indigenous peoples and new challenges. According to our program of work, we shall now have a dialogue with Indigenous peoples. But before we proceed to that, I'd just like our secretary to make an announcement, and I'll call one of our colleagues to say something before I open up and call the people in the speakers list. So please, Tatiana, you have the floor. Yeah.
Thank you, madam. I would just like to remind everybody in the conference room that it would be very much appreciated if you do not bring any drinks or any food to the conference room. This is the rule for the United Nations building, and we would like to be as disciplined as any other gathering in this building. Thank you very, very much. That includes coffee.
Yeah, thank you very much. I hope you all remember that you are not supposed to bring in food and coffee in the room. You can bring water. I think you are allowed to drink water, but not to bring coffee or any other food inside the room. Okay, before I call on the open the speakers list, yesterday when we adjourned, there were some issues and questions raised by the colleagues before the members of the interagency support group, the UN agencies, and other multilateral bodies. But we had a meeting early this morning with them from 8:30, so some of these issues were addressed. So we won't want to eat into the time of the indigenous peoples, so we will be directly going to the list of indigenous peoples. But before I do that, I'd like to ask my colleague Bartolome Clavero Salvador to have the floor. You can have the floor now.
Gracias, señora presidenta. Buenos días con todas y todos. Distinguidos colegas del foro, distinguidos representantes indígenas, representantes distinguidos de las agencias de Naciones Unidas y de los gobiernos, quería plantear un punto que creo que es clave y al que ha debido hacerse referencia, al que se ha hecho referencia por... ¿Hay traducción? Por las intervenciones de las agencias de Naciones Unidas y sobre la que más específicamente tenemos documentos por escrito de los que se han repartido una serie variada de documentos. La cuestión que me parece clave es del valor, la fuerza de la Declaración sobre los Derechos de los Pueblos Indígenas. Pues esto determina nuestra propia actividad, nuestras propias políticas. Entre los documentos con los que contamos, creo que hay una diferencia entre dos planteamientos muy distintos. Por un lado, está el documento de dos miembros anteriores del foro, la señora Nicolaisen y el señor Little Child. Por otra parte, creo que con planteamientos distintos, tratando también específicamente del valor de la declaración, tenemos un documento del Grupo de Apoyo Interagencial Interinstitucional y uno individual de la Organización Internacional del Trabajo. Diciéndolo resumidamente, mientras que el documento de los miembros anteriores del foro toman como punto de partida el valor vinculante de la declaración, los documentos de la interagencia y de la OIT niegan el carácter vinculante de la declaración. Porque no es un tratado y porque no es ratificado por los Estados. Hay ya una excepción, Bolivia ha ratificado. Luego cabe la ratificación. Es posible ratificar. El documento de la OIT matiza bastante la negación del valor vinculante. La declaración no tiene valor relevante, pero tiene, nos dice el documento de la OIT, tiene relevancia legal, porque puede contener obligaciones para los Estados en virtud de otras fuentes del derecho internacional, derecho consuetudinario, principios generales del derecho. Pero lo que me llama la atención es que en ningún momento se hace referencia al artículo 42 de la propia declaración. Si la declaración tiene un valor, si tiene un valor vinculante, es porque lo dice el artículo 42, que se dirige a las agencias de Naciones Unidas junto a los Estados para que promuevan la plena aplicación y la eficacia de la declaración. Esto es un lenguaje fuerte. No es usual en las declaraciones. La declaración se llama declaración, pero contiene principios de vinculación que no existen en otras declaraciones. Ya concluyendo, mi sugerencia iría en la línea del documento de la Organización Internacional del Trabajo, en el sentido de que subrayemos los elementos vinculantes de la declaración, entendiendo que el primer elemento es la declaración misma en su artículo 42. O avanzando un poco más, por lo menos el propio foro y las agencias de Naciones Unidas creo que deberían abandonar todo lenguaje que implique la negación de un valor vinculante a la declaración, porque la declaración es vinculante según ella misma. Incluso que evitemos comparar la declaración con las convenciones, porque es un nuevo tipo de instrumento internacional, la Declaración sobre Derechos de los Pueblos Indígenas, y su valor vinculante es diferente, es otro. Esta es mi reflexión y esta es mi sugerencia. Gracias.
Thank you very much, my distinguished colleague Bartolomé. I would like now to request my colleague Hassan to speak, but please I would like the members of the forum to limit themselves a bit, because we have 65 indigenous peoples who are wanting to speak. So Hassan, you have the floor.
استمعت مع زلف اللون سيدة الرئيسة بداية أود أن أهنئكم على انتخابكم رئيسة لهذه الدورة وكما أهنئ أعضاء المكتب الآخرين زملائي الذين انتخبوا لهذا للمكتب سيدتي الرئيسة وهذه أول دورة هي تنعقد بعد اعتماد إعلان حقوق الشعوب الأصلية ومن الضروري أن أقدم تهنئتي إلى كل المناضلين في الحركة العالمية للشعوب الأصلية وفي الحركات الإقليمية للشعوب الأصلية الذين ناضلوا طويلا من أجل الاعتراف بحقوق الشعوب الأصلية وطبعا بعد هذا الاعتماد يصبح شعار الشراكة من أجل الفعل والكرامة شعارا هاما في بالنسبة للشعوب الأصلية من جهة وبالنسبة للدول من جهة ثانية فالشراكة من أجل الفعل والكرامة يجب أن ينتقل في إطار تنفيذ فإعلان حقوق الشعوب الأصلية إلى شراكة في السلطة وشراكة في الثروة وشراكة في القيم هذه نقطة أساسية بالنسبة للشعوب الأصلية لأن احتكار السلطة واحتكار الثروات واحتكار القيم يؤدي إلى المزيد من الفقر والبؤس في العالم ولذلك فإن هذه الدورة تكتسي صبغة خاصة ويكتسي تفعيل الإعلان في المستقبل أهمية خاصة وأود أن أؤكد على الأفكار الأساسية التي قدمها زميلي قبل قليل بخصوص أهمية هذا الإعلان وقيمته وإلزاميته من كما قدم ذلك ومن الضروري كذلك أن أشير إلى أن السياسات الاستيعابية التي كانت قد تم اعتمادها لمدة طويلة أدت إلى حرمان الشعوب الأصلية من مقوماتها الأساسية، ويأتي تأتي التغييرات المناخية لكي تعقد الأمور. ومن الضروري هنا أن نشير إلى أن 80% من الأسباب التي أدت إلى الاحترار العالمي هي تأتي من الدول الصناعية، بينما تأتي 20% فقط من قطع الغابات أو من فقدان الغابات. لذلك فمسؤولية الدول الأكثر تقدم هنا مهمة جدا، وإنني أشكر بالخصوص الاتحاد الأوروبي الذي عقد لقاء خاصا بحضور ممثلين من منتدى الشعوب الأصلية، وذلك للمناقشة حول تفعيل إعلان حقوق الشعوب الأصلية. وأعتقد أنه من الأهمية بمكان القيام بمبادرات من هذا النوع من طرف جميع المنظمات الدولية الحكومية كذلك في مختلف المناطق. طبعا سيدتي الرئيسة، أكتفي بهذه الملاحظات إلى وقت آخر. شكرا.
Now we will start with the speakers list, and I'd like to clarify the rules that we have. I will first start with the indigenous parliamentarians who have enlisted, and then I'll go to the caucuses, first the global caucus, and then the different regional caucuses and thematic caucuses. And I will be giving the caucuses, the collective statements, 5 minutes. We will put the light on, so when you see the yellow light, that means that you have to summarize or conclude your statement, because immediately after that, the red light will come on. So please be very disciplined, because we have a long list of speakers. So I'd first like to call on Isabel Ortega Ventura, the member of Parlamento Indígena de America. You have the floor, madam.
Gracias, señora presidenta. En estos momentos le agradezco, como presidenta del Parlamento Indígena de América, tenemos una propuesta. Propuesta del Parlamento Indígena de Bolivia y de América para el Foro Permanente para las Cuestiones Indígenas, Cambio Climático. Introducción. Como producto del incremento de los gases de efecto invernaderos producido por los países desarrollados, los pueblos indígenas nos vemos afectados por los impactos de los cambios climáticos, causando sequías, inundaciones, heladas, granizadas, tormentas tropicales, desastres naturales de nuestra madre tierra. Los pueblos indígenas hemos conservado nuestra naturaleza con prácticas simples, tradicionales, hemos sabido preservar nuestros ambientes en perfecto equilibrio. Sin embargo, estos impactos nos dañan notablemente nuestra economía e incrementan la pobreza en nuestros países. Y, consecuentemente, los pueblos indígenas sufrimos consecuencias ambientales, económicos, sociales y culturales. Los parlamentarios de Bolivia y de América nos pronunciamos por las reservas consecuencias de impactos ambientales que causan los daños, más que todo los empresarios transnacionales e industriales, ya que esos nos interesan los derechos colectivos, biodiversidad, biocultural y los medios de vida. Comprometidos con la defensa de la vida y la diversidad de nuestra biocultural, los pueblos milenarios, originarios, campesinos del Collazo y Humarca de Bolivia y de América, respetando la biocultural y sus medios de vida, por miles de años vivimos en equilibrio y respeto de la vida, la cultura, Por eso, como pueblos indígenas, originarios campesinos comprometidos con la autodeterminación de nuestra tierra y territorio, es que se debe buscar el respeto de nuestro derecho, de nuestra diversidad, para la conservación de nuestro ecosistema y biocultural de nuestro pueblo, que por miles de años han mantenido nuestros ancestros. En consecuencia, emitimos las siguientes denuncias y exigimos. Uno, el capitalismo depredador ha desarrollado industrias que nos causan para una acumulación económica egoísta en el mundo, provocando efectos negativos catastróficos para la vivencia de naciones y pueblos indígenas originarios. Dos, los pueblos indígenas debemos participar, como también los indígenas legisladores, plenamente en la planificación, en programas de desarrollo en medio ambiente y cambio climático. Tres, el desarrollo industrial nunca ha tomado en cuenta a los pueblos indígenas en la planificación, programación, seguimiento, evaluación de su actividad industrial. Cuatro, exigimos la plena participación en programas y proyectos de cambio climático que se respete a los pueblos indígenas su participación. Cinco, los países desarrollados tienen que reducir las emisiones de los 6 gases efecto invernadero, ya que igual afecta a todo con el calentamiento global. Siendo el primer país emisor de estos gases es Estados Unidos. 6. Todos los países que no firmen el convenio de Kioto y son responsables de la muerte de los seres vivos del planeta Tierra. 7. Los sistemas actuales de manejo y uso de recursos naturales deben rescatar y aplicar la tecnología ancestral milenaria de los pueblos indígenas originarios del mundo, por ser la única alternativa de protección al medio ambiente que garantiza el hábitat para vivir bien. 8. Las naciones y pueblos indígenas originarios como reserva moral, cultural y práctica de valores de la humanidad son la última alternativa para contrarrestar al cambio climático mundial y recuperar el equilibrio ecológico. 9. Los países desarrollados e industrializados deben resarcir los daños causados por la destrucción del planeta y pago de la deuda histórica a las naciones y pueblos indígenas originarios. 10. Reorientar la política de los programas de cambio climático de los gobiernos de países del mundo. 11. Implementar un plan de acción a nivel mundial para revertir al estado actual del planeta y recuperar el equilibrio ecológico ambiental con participación directa de las naciones y pueblos indígenas originarios campesinos a nivel bilateral, multilateral y de países. Cumplimiento de normas alternativas. 1. Exigimos el cumplimiento implementación de las normas internacionales sobre los derechos de los pueblos indígenas, como el Convenio 169 de la OIT, Protocolo de Kioto y la Declaración de Naciones Unidas sobre los derechos de los pueblos indígenas. 2. Nos ratificamos y exigimos su cumplimiento y aplicación por los países del mundo los mandatos del Encuentro de los Pueblos Indígenas del Mundo realizado el 12 de octubre del 2007 en Cochabamba, Bolivia. Bueno, el Parlamento Indígena de Bolivia y el Parlamento Indígena de América agradece en estos momentos. Muchísimas gracias. Eso es el planteamiento.
Thank you very much. I'd like to thank Maria Isabel Ventura from the Parliament, Parlamento Indígena de América. I would like now to call on the speakers who will speak on behalf of the Global Indigenous Caucus, Benjamin Poles and Carmen Ramirez Buscan. You have the floor.
Gracias, señora presidenta. Los pueblos indígenas de todas las regiones del mundo nos unimos en una sola voz para hacer un llamado de acción muy urgente a la comunidad mundial y al sistema integral de la ONU para responder de forma inmediata y decisiva a esta crisis sin precedentes de los pueblos indígenas y el mundo natural atraviesan actualmente. Los impactos devastadores de la degradación ambiental y del cambio climático que los pueblos indígenas habíamos predicho durante muchos ciclos de tiempo a través de nuestro conocimiento...
Please don't speak very fast. The interpreters cannot catch up with you.
Gracias, señora presidenta. Los impactos devastadores de la degradación ambiental y del cambio climático que los pueblos indígenas habían predicho durante muchos ciclos de tiempo a través de nuestro conocimiento tradicional ahora están frente a nosotros. El cambio climático es real. Está generando impactos devastadores sobre nuestras tierras y territorios, derechos humanos, culturas, alimentación, soberanía, salud y pervivencia. Los pueblos indígenas del mundo presentarán sus testimonios y recomendaciones en la séptima sesión del foro, abordando estos impactos, las causas y soluciones y propuestas. Confiamos que serán tomadas en cuenta. Es evidente para nosotros que los impactos cada vez más devastadores del cambio climático ya se perciben y los sufren todos los pueblos, naciones, estados y comunidades del mundo. Apelamos a las Naciones Unidas, sus Estados miembros y a todas las agencias de la ONU y organizaciones, incluyendo el Consejo de Seguridad de la ONU, para que reconozcan, como no lo han hecho hasta ahora, la extrema urgencia y naturaleza crítica de la amenaza que enfrenta el mundo. Los impactos del cambio climático tienen consecuencias profundas y crecientes en cada área del mandato del Foro Permanente, como son el desarrollo, la salud, la educación y los derechos humanos. En forma particular, apelamos a que los Estados y la comunidad mundial presten atención a las diversas disposiciones de la Declaración de la ONU sobre los derechos de los pueblos indígenas que son violadas por los impactos crecientes del cambio climático y las actividades de desarrollo no sostenible que las han ocasionado, principalmente la explotación continua de los combustibles fósiles. Nuestros derechos a la libre determinación, al desarrollo, al consentimiento previo, libre e informado, a los recursos y tierras tradicionales, así como la capacidad productiva de nuestras tierras, nuestra salud y la práctica de nuestra cultura tradicional, entre otros, están todos siendo afectados. Esto viola el compromiso de Naciones Unidas y sus Estados miembros de mantener estos derechos para asegurar el bienestar, la dignidad, la supervivencia de los pueblos indígenas mediante la adopción de esta declaración.
We have seen that the states participating in the UN sessions addressing the Convention on Climate Change have not listened with full attention to the voices, concerns, and proposals of indigenous peoples, nor have they demonstrated the political will required to change the current disastrous course or to take actions that can respond effectively to the unprecedented calamity we are now facing. In fact, in our view, most responses by governments, international agencies, and international and regional
please,
financial...
Please slow down, slow down. The interpreters won't be able to interpret you. Slow down, please.
Financial institutions continue to be bound to market-based and industrial models, including continued subsidies for and dependency on fossil fuels, nuclear development, mega-development projects, the clean development mechanism, carbon trading, and the production of biofuels and agrofuels. Instead of contributing to solving these problems, they have resulted in further violations of rights for indigenous peoples, including relocations and land appropriations, military and paramilitary interventions, destructions of traditional food systems, along with greater environmental destruction and loss of biological diversity. As indigenous peoples and nations, we look to our people's traditional knowledge systems.
The interpreters are requesting you to slow down, please.
They have the copy. For real and effective solutions for culturally and environmentally adaptive measures which can ensure the survival of our communities, which must begin to implement without delay. We continue to reiterate to the world community that if we take care of the land, it will take care of us. It is our firm conviction that full respect for and recognition of indigenous people's rights to their traditional lands, territories, natural resources, and traditional sustainable economic systems is a key factor in preventing further acceleration of climate change, as well as finding solutions to reverse the damage. Indigenous peoples have contributed our philosophies and ways of life based on equilibrium and respect with the natural world. We know that climate change has been produced by the current dominant economic system based on irresponsible and unbridled exploitation and consumption of natural resources. Based on the above, we make the following recommendations. We call upon the Permanent Forum to express our insistence that the indigenous peoples of the world must be included as full participants in all international dialogues on climate change, in particular the UNFCCC, and that the necessary mechanisms and financial support be to ensure their inclusion be implemented without delay. We request that the Permanent Forum begin to compile models, best practices, and solutions addressing climate change used by indigenous peoples from around the world to be shared with other communities. Therefore, Madam Chairman, we urge the Permanent Forum in its seventh session, in its final report, to call for urgent, serious, and unprecedented action by the UN Economic and Social Council, along with all UN bodies and agencies, including the UN Security Council, recognizing climate change as an urgent and immediate threat to human rights, sustainable development, food sovereignty, and peace and security. We request that the Permanent Forum include in its final report a call on all countries to implement the highest, most rigorous, and stringent greenhouse gas reduction levels. As Indigenous peoples and nations, we affirm that there is no time to lose and half measures will not suffice. Our very survival is at stake. Thank you, Madam President.
Thank you very much. I'd like to thank the speakers for the Global Caucus, Benjamin Paules and Carmen Ramirez Buscan. I'd like now to call on the speaker who will speak on behalf of the Pacific Caucus, Few Elisara. You have the floor.
Patalovat, Tangatul Pacific, Fungal Tete Fono, Yabasin, Malul Tato Fono, Madam Chairperson. For Pacific peoples, the discussion on climate change is not just a theoretical issue that we talk about when we come to these global meetings. It is there, and we see the negative effects on our terrestrial and marine resources as fundamental basis of our daily lives. For us, it is a matter of life and death. In many cases, we are forced to leave our ancestral lands and territories and live in foreign lands that we do not identify with. As sovereign peoples and countries, our rights are protected under the Charter of the United Nations. We plead accountability against those causing these violations of our rights to exist as peoples, as countries, and as sovereign nations. Someone must bear responsibility for our demise, as when we lose our cultures, when our traditional ways of lives are trashed, and we are denied our freedom to exist as peoples. This is an issue of climate justice that we are calling for here, and we'll continue to do so in every opportunity that comes our way. The low elevation and high quantity of insular coastlines in many of our countries make it obvious that the Pacific is a very vulnerable and high-risk region. The region now suffers from loss of coastal land and infrastructure due to erosion, inundation, and tidal surges, increase in frequency and severity of cyclones, the warming of the oceans, destroy coral reefs, and the sea ecosystems which the livelihood of many of us islanders depend on. Changes in rainfall patterns increase droughts in some areas and more rainfall causing flooding in other areas. Increase in dengue fever and diarrhea outbreaks. Sugarcane, yams, taro, banana plantations, and cassava, which are the mainstay food sources for our peoples, are lost due to extreme temperatures and changes in the season severity of rainfall. Our drinkable water sources are affected due to changes in rainfall, sea level rise, and inundation by seawater. Dealing with crises such as climate change is expensive, sometimes bloody, and in human terms, invariably late. We in the Pacific firmly believe that it would be more humane and less expensive to act preventively to focus on resilience strategies and to meet threats upstream rather than to have them confront us as crises downstream. After ravaging the resources of Mother Earth for longer than history, those responsible are only now beginning to realize how little they know about what they have done to themselves and, unfortunately, to the rest of us. Indigenous peoples condemned the adaptation fund whose structure was set up in Bali as blood money because the 2% of adaptation funds from CDM projects, Clean Development Mechanism projects, have already caused the deaths of many of our indigenous peoples who refuse to relinquish their lands and territories and resort to fight to their deaths, protecting their lands and rights. Papua New Guinea said in February of this year in the General Assembly thematic debate on addressing climate change, and they say that in looking forward from Bali, the next 2 years will become increasingly complex as we struggle to define common but differentiated responsibilities and the steps all nations must undertake to deal with climate change. If we are to succeed, we must acknowledge the primary responsibility for global warming and its consequences today falls primarily upon industrialized nations, including the resulting mitigation and adaptation challenges all of humanity must now face. We are very concerned by the hubris of certain industrialized nations who promote emissions reductions in certain developing countries as a precondition for taking responsibility for carbon emissions at home. The Pacific Indigenous people seek leadership by example. All industrialized nations must demonstrate leadership by reducing carbon emissions within their own borders through deep and hard targets. This has to be the bedrock for any future international agreements on climate change. If climate change is indeed the defining human development challenge of the 21st century as stated in Bali, we cannot delude ourselves into thinking that this challenge can be addressed on the cheap. It is now a costly urgency stemming from the fact that climate change has taken us by surprise, that we are all now, all of us, desperately racing to catch up with the tomorrow already made obsolete by the reality of today. It is now necessary to also fundamentally review the debt obligations of developing countries through the prism of climate change. Many of them are still paying for infrastructural investments that are no longer viable or whose effective lifespans will be severely curtailed by climate change. How ironical. History will judge us not by the words we have spoken on these important issues or the outcomes of the many climate change conferences, but by the sincerity of our efforts and the success we achieve in bringing about beneficial and positive changes. We therefore conclude by making these four recommendations. We, the Pacific Caucus, recommend that indigenous peoples in the Pacific region and all other regions be included and integrated into all relevant climate change forums and meetings as valued stakeholders and experts, and ensuring that our human rights as peoples are promoted and protected. Secondly, the United Nations Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues undertake in conjunction with the Human Rights Council mechanism and the Interagency Support Group an expert study to determine the extent to which climate change policies and projects genuinely recognize and respect our rights enshrined in the Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous Peoples and the appropriate remedies to ensure Indigenous knowledge and rights are respected. And thirdly, the United Nations Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues actively participate in the forthcoming processes under the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change and other related processes in order to raise issues critical to indigenous peoples in these forums. And finally, the forum work in partnership with the Secretariat of the Convention on Climate Change and the Convention on Biodiversity and call upon members of the Interagency Support Group and all donors to provide new and additional financial support to developing countries to address climate change in ways determined appropriate by indigenous peoples without diverting resources meant for sustainable development. Sufficient financial resources must be provided to support indigenous networks to disseminate information on climate change in appropriate and accessible languages and through appropriate media to indigenous communities. We have also submitted to the Secretariat, Madam Chair, the longer version of our statement. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Fiu Elisara from the Pacific Caucus. I now would like to call on Yolanda Tiran, who will speak on behalf of the Indigenous Women's Caucus. And after her, I call on Andrea Carmen, who will speak on behalf of the North American Region Caucus. So, Yolanda Tiran, you have the floor.
Gracias, señora presidenta. Honorable señora presidenta, miembros del Foro Permanente, hermanos y hermanas indígenas, desde tiempos inmemorables, las mujeres indígenas hemos sostenido nuestras responsabilidades de cuidar a la familia, las culturas y la madre tierra. Como guardianas de la madre tierra, nosotras tenemos la responsabilidad moral y espiritual de asegurar su salud y bienestar, de ayudarla a sanar las heridas que le han causado a través de un uso compasionado y sabio de sus regalos hacia nosotras. Tenemos que dedicar nuestra fuerza a hacer un mundo mejor para las siguientes 7 generaciones, no solamente para nuestros niños, sino también para todas nuestras especies hermanas. Nosotras, como mujeres indígenas, tenemos conocimientos tradicionales específicos sobre la custodia de la madre tierra que deben ser reconocidos y honrados. Tenemos que resguardar y defender el aire, el agua y la tierra misma, así como reclamar nuestros roles y nuestros conocimientos tradicionales fundamentales. Las mujeres indígenas hemos sido profundamente afectadas por el cambio climático, en particular las mujeres indígenas y sus comunidades en los países poco industrializados. Sufren las consecuencias relacionadas con el cambio climático ocasionado por los países altamente industrializados. Nosotras apoyamos los 10 mandamientos para salvar a la madre tierra enunciados ayer por el presidente Evo Morales, los cuales hablan sobre la necesidad de realizar cambios sistémicos a los patrones capitalistas y de consumismo y a los conflictos armados que se realizan en nombre de la explotación no sostenible del medio ambiente, así como sobre una solución al desarrollo económico y social basada en los derechos humanos. Hacemos eco a sus llamados para respetar a la madre tierra a través de la producción y usos ecológicamente sustentados de alimentos, un acercamiento al desarrollo basado en los derechos humanos, incluyendo los derechos a la tierra y el derecho al agua, la producción local y el bienestar basados en los principios de la complementariedad y la coexistencia pacífica y equilibrada. También apoyamos las declaraciones de las agencias de las Naciones Unidas que llamaron a la realización de cambios sistémicos similares para lidiar con el cambio climático, la diversidad biocultural y las formas de vida a través del apoyo al papel de custodia de los papeles de los pueblos indígenas, particularmente de las mujeres indígenas. Los países contaminantes deben de tomar responsabilidad por su papel en el daño. La Declaración de los Derechos de los Pueblos Indígenas de las Naciones Unidas reconoce los derechos fundamentales de los pueblos indígenas que pueden solucionar los cambios climáticos, siendo estos derechos la protección de los sistemas de conocimiento tradicional, las lenguas indígenas y los modelos indígenas de desarrollo, el derecho a la tierra, el territorio y los recursos naturales que promueven la sustentabilidad ecológica en lugar de la explotación. En particular, llamamos la atención, entre otros, a los artículos 20, del 20 al 29, 31 y 32. Algunos de los otros derechos y obligaciones claves incluyen el derecho a la libre determinación de los pueblos indígenas, igualdad y a la no discriminación de los individuos y los pueblos, el derecho al desarrollo y la conservación, el derecho al consentimiento libre, previo e informado y el reconocimiento a los derechos otorgados por los tratados. Hay varias áreas en las que la aplicación de la Declaración de las Naciones Unidas resultará en soluciones efectivas para el cambio climático. Al presente, muchas de las soluciones ofrecidas están basadas en las necesidades del mercado. Los sistemas de comercialización del carbono son preocupantes práctica y éticamente. Como lo notó el presidente Evo Morales, el mecanismo del desarrollo limpio no ha contribuido a la reducción de las emisiones de carbono y ha contribuido más bien al aumento de la pobreza en los pueblos indígenas. De hecho, esta estrategia solo ha resultado en el aumento sustancial de emisiones. Cualquier estrategia de mitigación de las emisiones tiene que tomar en cuenta el impacto de los pueblos indígenas. La promoción de los bosques, cultivos y otras formas de vida genéticamente modificadas, así como la tala de bosques, incluyendo el bosque de lluvia para plantar agrocombustibles, son altamente dañinos. Los procesos de minería y extracción de materiales a gran escala son actividades intrínsecamente violentas para nuestra madre tierra. El desarrollo de los combustibles fósiles, el desarrollo del poder nuclear y las pruebas nucleares son también dañinos para la tierra, por lo que la exploración y excavaciones deben parar. Nosotras, el Cónclave de Mujeres Indígenas, por lo tanto, recomendamos e instamos al Foro Permanente a llamar a los Estados a implementar la Declaración de los Derechos de los Pueblos Indígenas de las Naciones Unidas, principios de sustentabilidad y la responsabilidad social de las corporaciones, y a las corporaciones transnacionales a que respeten esos estándares y leyes. Esto se aplica particularmente a los estados altamente industrializados y a las corporaciones transnacionales que tienen actividades de desarrollo en esos estados. Llamar a las agencias de las Naciones Unidas y a los estados a apoyar la reclamación de las prácticas y leyes tradicionales que conlleven a soluciones globales al cambio climático. Estas son consistentes con los derechos y obligaciones contenidas en la declaración. Estamos también pidiendo al Foro Permanente atender las recomendaciones del Foro Internacional de Mujeres Indígenas que se acaba de realizar en Lima, Perú, del 13 al 16 de abril del 2008. Llamamos a los estados a implementar el protocolo de Kioto 2005, el marco de la Convención sobre Cambio Climático de las Naciones Unidas y otras iniciativas internacionales que están lidiando con el cambio climático. Llamamos a los estados a los pueblos indígenas a establecer una moratoria global en las plantas y animales genéticamente modificados, en la exploración y excavación de combustibles fósiles, en el desarrollo de poder nuclear a gran escala y en la deforestación, ya que estas formas de desarrollo ponen a la vida la naturaleza en crisis. Para finalizar, señora presidenta, queremos solicitar al Foro Permanente la organización de un taller de expertos, incluyendo hombres, mujeres y ancianos, junto con la presencia del relator especial en los derechos de los pueblos indígenas. Muchas gracias, señora presidenta.
Thank you very much, Yolanda Terran, who spoke on behalf of the Indigenous Women's Caucus. I'd like to call now on Andrea Carmen, who will speak on behalf of the North America Region Indigenous People's Caucus. And after her, I will call on Azalini Caingang, who will speak on behalf of the Latin American Caucus. Andrea Carmen, you have the floor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Respectful greetings to all delegations. This statement is an excerpt of the written report submitted by the North America Region preparatory meeting for this session from the Coast Salish Territory, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, which was attended by 49 representatives from 38 Indigenous nations and organizations from North America. The report in its entirety is available as a conference room paper, CRP4, in the official documents for this session. Indigenous nations and peoples around North America are experiencing the impacts of climate change in their communities and traditional lands, including the disappearance of traditional subsistence foods, wild game, fish, berries, wild plants, and traditional food crops and plant medicines. Water levels are rising in coastal areas. Inland water tables, lakes, streams, rivers, and springs are diminishing. Arctic sea ice is rapidly disappearing. New diseases affect the food chain and human health. Climate change is violating Indigenous peoples' right to self-determination, peace and security, right to development, right to food, treaty rights, cultural integrity, right to health, and a range of other fundamental human rights that are affirmed in the UN Declaration on Rights of Indigenous Peoples. Attempts by state governments and corporations to respond to these critical issues have been woefully inadequate, often creating more problems than they solve. International cooperation and solidarity, taking into account the rights, perspectives, and traditional understandings of Indigenous peoples, as well as our full participation in ongoing international dialogues and policy developments, are essential to addressing the diverse challenges of climate change. Based on these understandings, participants in the North America Caucus session strongly affirm that effective solutions to climate change must take a rights-based approach, which recognizes and includes Indigenous peoples' traditional knowledge systems. The full report lists a number of projects, programs, and initiatives by Indigenous peoples and local communities, which are responses and solutions to climate change and global warming based on traditional knowledge and practices. These are effective tools for mitigation, adaptation, and resiliency and must be supported. Participants affirm the fundamental importance of treaty rights to this discussion. Participants affirmed our sacred responsibility to institute a new form of energy economy built on respect for the natural world, energy conservation, and implementation of energy efficiency. Participants recognize that credible scientists and climate change studies are urging a reduction of carbon dioxide emissions by 80% over the coming decade. Participants affirm that the dire need for Canada and the United States as industrialized countries and major contributors to greenhouse gases must adopt the most stringent, vigorous, and aggressive CO2 reduction plans. participants recognized that indigenous peoples' vital expertise and perspectives have not been effectively included and have often been deliberately marginalized in previous and ongoing national, regional, and global discussions on climate change. Participants strongly affirmed that non-sustainable development activities, including mineral and fossil fuel extraction, deforestation, damming, uranium mining and milling, as well as the production of waste and proliferation of toxics, creates and exacerbates the growing impacts of climate change. Participants recognize that many indigenous peoples from this region and around the world have called for a moratorium on new exploration for the extraction of oil, natural gas, and coal within and near indigenous lands. Participants also affirmed Article 32 of the UN Declaration, which upholds the right of free, prior, informed consent for indigenous peoples, and Article 3, which upholds the right to self-determination. Participants expressed concern that carbon trading mechanisms, including cap and trade, commodify the Earth's atmosphere, turning the Earth's carbon cycling capacity into property to be bought or sold in a global market, and undermining the Earth's ability and capacity to support a climate conducive to life. Participants expressed profound concerns about the causal factors and impacts of climate change on water security for indigenous peoples. Participants also expressed concern that many strategies being promoted for the mitigation of climate change in North America and around the world, including agrofuel and biofuel, the World Bank RED initiative, carbon tradings, carbon sinks, and other market-based approaches have contributed to further environmental degradation and the violation of indigenous peoples' rights. We also submit the following recommendations to the Permanent Forum to conclude, Madam Chair. We recommend that the Permanent Forum request ECOSOC and the Human Rights Council that the expert mechanism on rights of indigenous peoples conduct a thematic study on climate change. We ask that members of the Permanent Forum meet with the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change to establish formal structures for the full, direct, and active participation of indigenous peoples. We also call upon the United Nations Permanent Forum to compile best practices, resiliency solutions, and strategies submitted by indigenous peoples to this and other sessions as a resource that can be used by indigenous peoples around the world. And finally, Madam Chair, the participants endorsed the full implementation by all states, including the U.S. and Canada, of all provisions of the UN Declaration, including provisions relating to the right to free, prior, informed consent as a key solution-based approach to addressing the current climate crisis. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Andrea Carmen, for the North American Caucus. I now call on Azalini Caingang for the Latin America Caucus, and after her, Patricia Cochran for the Arctic Caucus. Azalini Caingang, you have the floor.
Bueno, muchas gracias. Solo una aclaración. Habla Sebastián Mancinieri y el nombre del caucus quedó de Conclave de Aviala. Son las dos correcciones, señora presidenta. Siguiendo, señora presidenta, primeramente agradecemos al señor presidente constitucional de Bolivia, Evo Morales, y por su liderazgo en adopción de la Declaración sobre los Derechos de los Pueblos Indígenas y su decidida implementación. Los pueblos indígenas de Aviala, por milenio hemos desarrollado una relación colectiva, espiritual, cosmológica de respeto a nuestra madre tierra, lo que ha permitido la preservación de los recursos naturales y la supervivencia de la humanidad. El calentamiento global es una calidad mundial que afecta a los pueblos del mundo y especial a los más de 50 millones de hombres, mujeres, jóvenes, niños y niñas indígenas de Aviala. Señora presidenta, lo responsable del calentamiento global y el cambio climático son los estados industrializados y su estilo de vida de consumo excesivo y despilfarro a su visión mercantilista sobre la vida y la naturaleza, como el actual mercado de carbón. Los pueblos indígenas de Abiyala, ante las futuras decisiones mundiales que nos afectan, hemos realizado reuniones preparatorias en la región sobre el cambio climático en La Paz y Santa Cruz, Bolivia, en el presente año, dejando claro lo responsable de este fenómeno mundial. Nosotros no aceptamos que lo responsable del calentamiento global adopte medida hipócrita y sintomática para evadir su responsabilidad de reducir su consumo excesivo al costo de culpar a los más pobres, como los pueblos indígenas, y imponer proyectos de muerte en nuestros territorios. La única medida urgente que debe exigir la comunidad internacional es que los países industrializados reduzcan su consumo de depósitos fósiles que nos están llevando a catástrofe mundial. Por otro lado, es inaceptable que los estados parte del convenio marco sobre cambio climático, el protocolo de Kioto, se resista a reconocer la participación de los pueblos indígenas en estas importantes discusiones. Es repudiable que los proyectos de mitigación de cambio climático, como el mecanismo de desarrollo limpio y ahora el fondo para reducir las emisiones de carbono, mediante protección de los bosques del Banco Mundial, se decide sin nuestro consentimiento previo, libre e informado, y simplemente la fuerza y signifiquen el asesinato de líderes indígenas, desplazamiento forzoso, arrestos ilegales, militarización, usurpación de nuestra tierra y territorio y recursos con los que nuestra seguridad alimentaria. Señora Presidenta, como testimonio de lo dicho, se construye proyecto MDL como los hidroeléctricas de Chaquinola contra las Novo Bugler y Nazas de Panamá, Belo Monte y Paratinga en Brasil, y todos los proyectos de ILSA, entre otros. Por otro lado, vemos la ironía de los proyectos exitosos, como el de energía eólica de Repirachi, implementado en territorio del pueblo Wayuu. En la área de intentar concluir, señora, vamos a las propuestas. Insta a los estados y agencia de la ONU que en la medida en que adopte las conferencias de las partes sobre cambio climático, implementando inmediatamente los principios y derechos consagrados en las declaraciones de los derechos de los pueblos indígenas. Segundo, instar a la conferencia de las partes y a los estados miembros que se asegure la participación plena y efectiva en todos los procesos ¿Puedo concluir? Ya. Instar a las conferencias de las partes a la constitución de un grupo de trabajo o de expertos indígenas sobre cambio climático con mandato de evaluar todos los mecanismos, en particular adaptabilidad, vulnerabilidad y mitigación, como los actuales proyectos de mecanismo de desarrollo limpio. Último, cuarto, insta a los gobiernos que solicite el consentimiento previo, libre, informado de los pueblos indígenas y el principio de precaución pertinente en el marco de implementación de los megaproyectos en la región que esté altamente vinculado con la deforestación, principalmente área incidencia donde viven los pueblos indígenas en aislamiento voluntario. Muchas gracias.
Muchas gracias, señor. We appreciate your remarks. The next person on the list is Ms. Patricia Cochran. She will be speaking for the Arctic Caucus. Madam, you have the floor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Let me begin in the right way, first of all, by thanking the Creator for this beautiful day that has been given to us. Let me honor the people whose homelands we are upon today. Let me also remember all of our ancestors who have come before us and to honor our elders who are among us. Madam Chair, the Sami and the Inuit who make this joint statement are peoples of the Arctic. We have lived for thousands of years in what is known today as Norway, Sweden, Finland, Russia, Alaska, Canada, and Greenland. We will strongly promote, Madam Chair, that the discussion here today will lead to action as recommendations are sent up the UN hierarchy and are reviewed by ECOSOC. We are confident that this will happen, as we, the members of the Arctic Caucus, will continually remind UN member states and the UN agencies that they have established not to drop this matter. When it comes to coping and adapting to climate change, we have much to offer the United Nations. We have concrete proposals. Both our traditional knowledge and our other knowledge systems are invaluable tools that we offer the members of the United Nations. We hope that they will agree to use them. We commend, Madam Chair, the UN Secretary General for having hosted a high-level climate change summit last September, where he invited heads of state and members of civil society, including an indigenous representative, to speak with one another. By hosting such a summit, the Secretary General is calling upon all member states and the United Nations agencies to place the matter of climate change as a matter of first priority. I would like to remind you that this high-level summit opened with a very short video and that the first images projected were that of the Arctic, the melting ice cap of Greenland, and the thinning ice. The Nobel Peace Prize-winning Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change highlights the fact that the Arctic is warming faster than any other place on this planet. And I would like to remind all those that are listening that we, the Sami and the Inuit, live in that Arctic. While the Arctic Caucus does not want to look back at the closed-door environment that existed in numerous previous conferences of the parties of the UNFCCC, including the process that led to Kyoto, and we would rather look forward optimistically, we must collectively learn from our mistakes. It is clear that in future COPs, the plight of indigenous peoples will not be addressed if they are not at the table and they are not involved in the decision-making. We call upon the United Nations to open the door to indigenous peoples in all matters affecting climate change. While we speak to this agenda item from an Arctic perspective, we do so in solidarity with our brothers and sisters, our other indigenous people. The Sami and Inuit are highlighting the specific challenges of the Arctic because they are real and they hurt us. But we are also doing so because we know that we are all connected. What we see most visibly in the Arctic today, indigenous peoples on small islands in the Pacific and in the mountains and the rainforests of South America and in the fertile soils and deserts of Africa will experience much more effect tomorrow. Already today, we see the effects of climate change everywhere. While we must attack the causes of climate change vigorously, Madam Chair, let us be cautious in how we plan mitigation strategies. Indigenous peoples have experienced not only the effects of climate change most dramatically, but they have borne the brunt of misguided mitigation measures that are mostly done without consultation and often without any thought. How else does one explain, Madam Chair, the numerous examples of hydropower plants that are flooding our lands, sprawling windmills, farms that are interfering with our reindeer herding areas, geothermal plants that are displacing our sacred sites, and the biofuel crisis that we have heard so much about? There's even talk of going back to nuclear power plants that are often placed on or near our lands, our territories, and thus in turn mean uranium mining near our settlements. Let us talk before we act. We would like today to focus on three very important recommendations for this forum to consider. They are, one, each United Nations agency that works on climate change matters should develop a special Arctic focal point for climate change. Two, the UNFCCC should develop a seat at the negotiating table specifically dedicated to Indigenous peoples, in which we would have direct access to decision makers and where we would be able to offer our knowledge in constructive ways. And three, all UN member states and agencies should include in their climate change strategies a screening mechanism that evaluates the impacts of mitigation measures themselves on Indigenous peoples. I thank you for this opportunity, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much for your kind words. Thank you, Ms. Cochran from the Arctic Caucus. The next person on our list is Kaneki Senya from the African Caucus. You have the floor, sir. Thank you very much.
Honorable Chairperson, members of the UN Permanent Forum, ladies and gentlemen, greetings from the continent of Africa. Since time immemorial, we indigenous peoples of Africa have been living cooperatively with nature and transmitting the respect of nature from generation to generation, and have been living with and of the land. We are concerned about the ever-changing climate, which is having adverse impacts on our existence, livelihoods, cultures, and knowledge systems. Different communities are experiencing climate change in Africa in different ways. In North Africa, desertification is increasing, with the sand going as far as to the coastal cities. Desertification is also a pressing problem for pastoralist communities in East, West, and Southern Africa. For hunter-gatherer communities, deforestation and forest degradation driven by the demand for forest products by multinational and national companies are threatening their very existence. Deforestation is also causing the drying of rivers, lakes, soil degradation as a result of soil erosion, irregular and uncertain rainfall patterns, among others. Climatic changes are causing socio-economic problems for communities. These include food and water scarcities, loss of livestock, increased and frequent droughts, and high instances of indigenous migration to urban centers in search of livelihoods. This will definitely have long-term adverse cultural impacts on indigenous communities in Africa. Climate change is a problem arising out of the continued extraction and consumption of fossil fuels. We are concerned that indigenous communities in Africa are facing problems and will have to pay a price for problems that they had no role in creating. But while we acknowledge the focus climate change is attracting in the international community, we are further concerned that the prescriptions for its solutions will not work and will be reasons to further deny us our rights. We have serious reservations on RED and other proposed mechanisms. We assert that the solution to deforestation is the recognition of land tenure of forest and other indigenous communities. We recommend that the UN Permanent Forum members that indigenous peoples are experts in climate change mitigation and adaptation, and must be consulted as we are the custodians of traditional knowledge and ecosystems. We urge the UNFCCC to open access to its processes for indigenous peoples of Africa and from other parts of the world. And we urge the UN Convention on Desertification to involve indigenous people from Africa in its processes, research, and decisions. African governments and the donor community should give more support to indigenous peoples of Africa to build their understanding and involvement in climate change processes. And we further urge African states to urgently formally recognize indigenous peoples, their cultures and traditional ecological systems in the spirit of the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Sena, for your kind words. The next person on our list is from the Asia Caucus. Madam, are you in the room for the Asia Caucus? Madam, you have the floor. Sir, I beg your pardon. Sir, you have the floor.
Thank you, Madam. We representatives of the indigenous people in Nepal, India, and Northeast India, Bangladesh, Burma, Thailand, Cambodia, Vietnam, Malaysia, Indonesia, Philippines, Taiwan, and Japan have deliberated on the issues of climate change for 2 days in Kathmandu, Nepal, from 25 to 26 February 2008, as part of the ASEAN regional preparatory meetings for the UN Permanent Forum. We have identified issues that need to be addressed during the seventh session of the United Nations Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues. We note with great concern the impacts of climate change on the livelihood and health of indigenous peoples. We depend on the land, forests, rivers, and sea as a source of sustenance. Changes in climate have adversely affected the patterns of farming and fishing seasons. Extreme in weather patterns, for example, high or no rainfall, which occur in higher frequencies and in longer periods, have brought about in some cases natural disasters due to severe floodings or droughts, incidents of a disease outbreak. The indigenous communities who are faced with this situation have to endure untold sufferings. We also noted with dismay and alarm the solutions to climate change being offered at the moment by the international community. Adaptation and mitigation schemes tend to overlook our rights as indigenous peoples. Funds from such schemes do not benefit the indigenous communities, but instead goes directly to governments, often times in violation of indigenous people's rights. The example of using biofuels as a solution for climate change is misleading, as more of the indigenous people's land would be opened up for plantations to produce biofuels. More food crops are also being used for biofuels, which would burden the indigenous peoples in terms of their food security. Additionally, food price would also increase by 30% to 40%. Additionally, the recently adopted program on reduced emissions from deforestation and forest degradation, or REDD, at COP13 in Bali, remains a major source of concern for many. Indigenous peoples are not sure whether RED will bring in benefits or further devastate their lives and livelihoods. There was a consensus on the need to further study RED and other mitigation schemes. We recognize the need for governments and the international communities to address climate change issues, but we reiterate that these initiatives should not have negative effects on the rights of indigenous rights and indigenous people. Therefore, having stated our concerns, we would like to make some recommendations to the Permanent Forum to take into consideration and action. First, indigenous people should be included in all the policies and decision-making process relating to climate change at the international, regional, and national levels, in accordance to Article 18 of the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. Second, the Permanent Forum to form a committee to undertake studies on the effects of climate change on indigenous peoples and to identify them as among the more vulnerable groups. Third, Ponent Forum to identify the good and bad practices of mitigation and adaptation schemes put forward by the UNFCCC and Kyoto Protocol. This would also help to take into account indigenous people's rights. The Permanent Forum to conduct an in-depth analysis on food security and impact on the traditional livelihoods of indigenous peoples. Fifth, the Permanent Forum to take further steps on the review of expansion of biofuels and its impact to indigenous peoples. Six, the principle of obtaining the free prior informed consent, indigenous people must be upheld in any projects relating to mitigation and adaptation schemes implemented in the ancestral territory, and independent monitoring system should be developed. Seven, there should be an education and awareness raising program among indigenous people on the issues of climate change. This should be supported by the national governments and other funding institutions. Eight, the traditional knowledge of indigenous people related to sustainable resource use and conservation of the environment should also be recognized as part of the solution to climate change. Nine, adaptation funds established by the UNFCCC should be accessible and given directly to indigenous people. 10, strengthening projects that indigenous people are undertaking to mitigate impact of climate change, such as windmills, should be also supported and replicated to other indigenous communities. 11, providing full support on low cost and appropriate technology for indigenous people in coping with climate change. And the last, I request the Permanent Forum to liaise with the UNFCCC to ensure that indigenous people have full and effective participation in all levels of planning and decision making in implementation of the Nairobi Work Program and also Substar and also SBI program, and also human rights based approach be used in this work. Thank you very much, Madam.
Thank you very much, Kitty Sakratanak Prajangsri from the Asia Caucus. I'd like now to call on Sky Schoalfield of the Indigenous Youth Caucus. Is he in the room? Yeah, you have the floor.
Good morning, Madam Chair. I'd like to start by thanking you for this opportunity to give us this to give this intervention at this critical moment in history to the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues on this year's theme regarding climate change. We would like to acknowledge the Indigenous people who have come from all corners of the earth to gather here today, and would also like to give thanks for the mountains, lakes, rivers, seas, and all living beings that have inhabited this earth and provide us with the means to survive, for those are the things that we are fighting for here today. As the next generation to take responsibility and care for Mother Earth, we bring you this statement and the following recommendations out of respect, honor, and dignity. With our ancestors' footprints and prayers as our guiding path, our environment is out of balance, and it's due to things that we have done together as the human race, and it is a problem that we must solve together. And we believe, us as Indigenous people, we support the statement that we as Indigenous people are the people most affected by climate change and also are the ones most capable to reverse the effects. We have prepared the following recommendations. We asked that the Council use their public influence to impress upon the world the importance of acknowledging global climate change and the amount of expediency that we need to address it with. Implementing clean, just, sustainable, and renewable energy practices along with localized groups that can address the problem that we all face. We ask that you hold parties responsible for major sources of pollutions and emissions of greenhouse gases accountable, such as enforcing and upholding stricter global pollution regulations that will be heeded by polluting parties. We are calling for a moratorium on new fossil fuel development in indigenous territories and support indigenous peoples' rights to oppose carbon trading. We respectfully request that you provide support to communities that directly suffer from the adverse effects of climate change. For if we act now, not only can we reverse harm done to indigenous lands, but stop the further degradation which would be left to the next generation of indigenous peoples if left untreated. We also recognize that any assistance given now would be exponentially less than that needed if these problems continued. Due to the fact that animal agriculture contributes such a large portion of greenhouse gas emissions, land consumption, and deforestation, we strongly urge the United Nations to research and recommend to relevant government agencies new, sustainable, and ecologically sound production systems for the world. In support of previous youth caucuses, we call for full and effective participation and support of indigenous youth in all discussions and decision-making processes concerning indigenous rights. We request the permanent forum to establish a permanent youth component of the UN PFII. What we are asking for is support from the UN to help facilitate youth involvement in the annual forums. We'd also like to add, Madam Chairperson, that we are in full support and welcome the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. We call for the full implementation of this declaration in all countries of the world. We understand that the UN system may prevent you from implementing any restrictive legislation, but we respectively remind the Council how important this issue is not only to Indigenous peoples of the world, but of all of the Earth's inhabitants. We have asked that you hold responsible parties accountable, enforce clean air and water mandates, fund real effective solutions that treat the causes of global climate change and not just the symptoms of it, but solutions designed to restore the Earth's integrity and prevent future degradation. And in return, we make a promise to you to do all that is in our power to assist these efforts. And we also commit to addressing and decreasing our amount of energy consumption that will ultimately lead to less energy needs and lead the fight for the ecological integrity of our planet Earth. Thank you.
I'd like now to call on Luis Evelis Andrade Casama, who will speak on behalf of Onik Sikoin Fuerza Mujeres Wayuu. And after him, I will call on Chief Charles William of the Caribbean Caucus. Luis Evelis Andrade, are you in the room? Yes, you have the floor, sir.
Gracias, señora presidenta. Es una intervención conjunta de las organizaciones anunciadas. Señora Presidenta, celebramos que discusiones como la de cambio climático sean puestas en escenarios públicos del orden global. Sin embargo, llamamos la atención a los estados y gobiernos sobre la sinceridad y disposición para abordar este tipo de asuntos, pues no se trata de un tema menor, se trata de la supervivencia de la humanidad, de la vida de la Madre Tierra. En Colombia, el gobierno del presidente Álvaro Uribe Vélez, en vez de proteger la biodiversidad y promover políticas para mitigar el cambio climático, ha promovido una serie de reformas legales y aún de la misma constitución política que abren las puertas del país a las multinacionales del cartón, madereras, mineras y de agrocombustibles, quienes para afianzar sus proyectos e intereses económicos, como lo han demostrado algunas investigaciones, se han beneficiado no pocas veces del paramilitarismo, que como ya es conocido, han cometido asesinatos, desplazamiento forzado, persecución a las organizaciones y se han apropiado violentamente las tierras y territorio de los pueblos indígenas, comunidades afrodescendientes y campesinas. En Colombia, el gobierno, bajo el concepto de la seguridad inversionista y el impulso al desarrollo alternativo, ha sancionado leyes orientadas al aprovechamiento de los recursos naturales con serias implicaciones sobre el cambio climático y los derechos humanos y colectivos de los pueblos indígenas. Entre estas leyes podemos destacar la ley forestal, que fue declarada inexequible por la Corte Constitucional por violar el derecho a la consulta, el Estatuto de Desarrollo Rural, que desconoce los derechos territoriales de los pueblos indígenas y pone los territorios al servicio de las multinacionales, que en su afán de ganancia desconocen la función ecológica de los mismos. El darle a los territorios indígenas de Colombia vocación forestal y de producción de agrocombustible a gran escala pone en riesgo no solo la vida de los pueblos indígenas, sino que pone en riesgo ecosistemas de gran importancia para la humanidad, como son los bosques de la Amazonía y del Chocó biogeográfico, que juegan un papel casi determinante en el equilibrio climático mundial. Como resultados de esta medida en el Chocó biogeográfico, una de las zonas con mayor biodiversidad del planeta, los territorios indígenas están siendo sometidos a la siembra de plantaciones de monocultivos para agrocombustible y la deforestación masiva, lo cual ha cambiado los cauces de los ríos, causando inundaciones, pérdida de especies acuáticas y selváticas, calentamiento del agua por la sedimentación de los ríos. Como si fuera poco, con la excusa de combatir el narcotráfico, los gobiernos de Colombia y Estados Unidos han satanizado la hoja sagrada de la coca, implementando una política equivocada, las fumigaciones con glifosato con efectos nocivos graves en el medio ambiente y en los indígenas, como es el caso del pueblo Aguá al suroccidente de Colombia. En la discusión sobre alternativas para la generación de energía debemos ir con preocupación y seguridad. En Colombia se implementó un parque eólico Jepirrachi en territorio Guayú, que ha sido presentado por el gobierno y otros organismos como un ejemplo exitoso de energía alternativa. Sin embargo, para el pueblo Guayú ha significado la llegada del paramilitarismo a su territorio. Como respaldo a los grupos económicos con interés en la obra, se dan amenazas, atentados, secuestro, límites a la libre circulación y al pastoreo que es tradicional para el pueblo Guayú, así como al desconocimiento de la espiritualidad de este pueblo, ya que el parque desconoce lo sagrado de sus cementerios. Por lo tanto, solicitamos que el foro recomiende al sistema de Naciones Unidas para que reoriente la discusión sobre el cambio climático en lo referido a los pueblos indígenas y no se siga planteando que los indígenas nos debemos adaptar a la destrucción de nuestro planeta, sino que los gobiernos deben asumir la responsabilidad de transformar sus prácticas industriales y sobre todo sus posturas políticas para así caminar hacia la reversión de los efectos climáticos y salvar a la madre naturaleza. A los gobiernos, organismos de Naciones Unidas y otros actores para que garanticen que los pueblos indígenas estemos presentes activamente en la toma de decisiones sobre protocolos y convenios que conciernen al tema del calentamiento global y la biodiversidad a nivel regional. A los gobiernos que se niegan a firmar pactos y protocolos internacionales sobre los cambios climáticos, como es el caso del protocolo de Kioto, a que se responsabilicen por los efectos nocivos del cambio climático. A los gobiernos, los organismos y las agencias de financiación, para que en el caso de la implementación de energías renovables como las plantas solares y energía eólica, no atropellen la integridad de sus territorios y consulten a los pueblos involucrados en los términos del convenio 169 de la OIT y la declaración de la ONU sobre los derechos humanos de los pueblos indígenas. Gracias.
Can you do it for? Okay. Thank you very much. I'd like now to call on Chief Charles Williams for the Caribbean Caucus. But this time I would like now the people to limit their speech to 4 minutes. So Chief Charles Williams, you have the floor.
Raise your hand here. Madam Chair.
Distinguished delegates, state representatives, ladies and gentlemen. In my language, I bring you greetings from the Caribbean, and more so from the indigenous people of Waitukubuli, Dominica. In my language, we say, Mabrika, Mabrika. And you should say to me, Mabrika, Mabrika, Kinuni Kaikarihi. And then you say to me, Ati Kaikarihi. Then I say, Kaima. Those are the words of the once brave and heroic race that stood up to defend our lands, defend our people, and defend the principles that we stood for. Colonization was brought to us, to our shores, just over 500 years ago. They came hungry for our lands and mineral resources, Colonization was brought to our shore just over 500 years ago. They came hungry for our lands and mineral resources. We all know too well the outcome of colonization. The might of the European colonizers was much too strong for us. We could not match the weapons and tools they used to fight us. As a result, they diminished our people to the remaining few that we are today. They have not only taken our lands and wealth to build their empires that they are so boastful of today, but they have divided us, integrated us, assimilated us into their societies, so much so that we've lost our identity, our language, our culture, in many instances, the boast of the extinction of our people. I come from the Kalinago people of the beautiful Waitukubuli, our native name for Dominica. Dominica is being promoted as a nature island of the Caribbean with 365 rivers, 3 national parks, one being declared by UNESCO as a World Heritage Site, 2 forest reserves, an abundance of flora and fauna, and is the only island in the Caribbean where it is said, should Columbus return, he would recognize all because it was protected by our ancestors. Today, we the indigenous people occupy 1.5% of, or roughly 4.5 square miles of the island of Dominica that holds a total amount of 300 square miles of land, the island of our last ancestral stronghold. Ladies and gentlemen, state representative, indigenous brothers and sisters, the Caribbean got its name after us. We were the original owners of the entire Caribbean archipelago. Then the Treaty of Aix-la-Chapelle of 1748 that allowed us ownership of Dominica, St. Vincent, Grenada, and Tobago. These islands were again totally taken away from us under another treaty, this time the Treaty of Paris of 1763. In 1903, we were again allowed to settle on what is considered today a reservation consisting of 3,700 acres of land, more or less, in a very remote area on the Atlantic side of the island, yet we survive. We have continued living in communion with Mother Nature and passing on our culture and tradition to our children from generation to generation. What is happening in the world today with climate change and globalization is certainly not the doing of indigenous people, but the greed for wealth and power to control such wealth and industries alike, we found ourselves suffering the worst end of the impact of climate change and its effects. I am in total agreement with the views and sentiments expressed by President Evo Morales of Bolivia. I would not be able to put it in a better context. Indigenous peoples are forced in most remote areas in every country where we exist, and even when faced with the forces of natural disasters such as floods, hurricanes, landslides, earthquakes, volcanoes, we suffer the most because we do not have readily access finance capital to live in selected areas and to build adequate protective shelters. Ladies and gentlemen, climate change is a reality. Like it or not, it is there for all of us and not some of us. Whether we are rich or we are poor, whether we are weak or we are powerful, we will all suffer the consequences of climate change. We are already realizing the impact of this change. Every year, we see larger floods and hurricanes, and those should send us a clear message as to the direction we should take. We should listen to the voices of the indigenous people. Respect Mother Earth. In my country, we have embarked on a reforestation and conservation program, but we need the support of all states and the United Nations to assist us in reaching our goals, to ensure that we play our part together in the protection of the environment. I thank you.
Thank you very much. I'd like to call now on Aidan Alarcon, who will speak on behalf of the Foundation for Research Support of Indigenous Peoples and other organizations. After him, I'll call on Pacific Mukumba. Aidan Alarcon, you have the floor. Is that here? Not in the room. Pacific Mukumba, Center Accompaniment de Autochton Pygmies.
Yeah.
Okay. You have the floor.
Yeah. Where is he?
Yes, you have the floor. Is it
Madame la Présidente.
Okay, Adan Alarcon. You have the floor. You can speak now.
The mic.
It's okay. On.
Okay. Muchas gracias, señora presidenta. Los pueblos indígenas de 6 regiones del mundo participantes del taller Proyecto Acceso Global, Capacitación para los Pueblos Indígenas 2008, reunidos en Nueva York los días 16 al 18 de abril del año 2008, hemos compartido nuestras experiencias y preocupaciones por los efectos dramáticos del cambio climático en nuestros territorios tradicionales que constituyen la base de nuestra vida como pueblos. El cambio climático es una realidad en nuestros pueblos. Las estaciones climáticas han cambiado dramáticamente, permitiendo la sequía y desertificación de nuestros territorios, derretimiento de los glaciares y el hielo del mar, muerte de animales, plantas y la disminución de la biodiversidad. Las islas del Pacífico, como Tuvalu, se están hundiendo y la costa está erosionándose. En otras islas en el Pacífico, como en el Caribe, la seguridad alimentaria está amenazada por la erosión de los suelos y la desaparición acelerada de los bosques húmedos. En la zona andina y en la cuenca amazónica de Sudamérica y África, se observa el proceso acelerado de desertificación. Se están eliminando zonas boscosas y los lagos y el agua está disminuyendo, amenazando la subsistencia tradicional de los pueblos indígenas, que es la base de nuestra vida. No somos los responsables del cambio climático. Las acciones de los gobiernos y las corporaciones han creado los efectos del cambio climático. Al contrario, hemos contribuido como pueblos indígenas a través de nuestros conocimientos milenarios, como vivir en armonía con la naturaleza y la madre tierra. Los esfuerzos de los gobiernos vinculados al comercio de carbono y el desarrollo de los biocombustibles o agrocombustibles, lejos de contribuir a solucionar los problemas, han generado pérdida de derechos para los pueblos indígenas, mayor destrucción ambiental y desplazamiento forzado. Entonces, señora presidenta, planteamos a la séptima sesión del Foro Permanente lo siguiente. En su informe final, instamos que llamen a las partes del Convenio de las Naciones Unidas sobre Cambio Climático incluir a los pueblos indígenas en condiciones de igualdad con los estados en las discusiones sobre cambio climático, incluyendo, primer punto, el establecimiento de sesiones de expertos de pueblos indígenas y no indígenas que presenten nuestras preocupaciones y elaboren recomendaciones para la discusión de la conferencia de las partes. Punto 2. Flexibilidad para el acceso directo de los pueblos indígenas, incluyendo en el Fondo de Adaptación. El punto 3. Aplicación de las disposiciones de la Declaración de los Derechos Indígenas, aprobado por la Asamblea General, como una norma mínima en la elaboración de las políticas de mitigación y adaptación. En conclusión, señora presidenta, instamos al Foro Permanente a informar a los organismos y agencias de las Naciones Unidas, incluso al Consejo de Seguridad, de esta amenaza inmediata de los derechos humanos y la vida de nuestros pueblos indígenas y todos los pueblos del mundo. Muchas gracias, señora presidenta.
Thank you very much. I'd like to call now on Pacific Mukumba, Centre Accompaniment de Octotok Pygmies. Is he here? No? Oh, you're here? Okay. You have the floor, sir.
Madame la Présidente, le peuple pygmée de la République démocratique du Congo, représenté par les associations autochtones pygmées à ses assises, voudraient bien présenter leurs préoccupations en rapport avec les thèmes de ces assises. En rapport avec les changements climatiques, la situation des peuples pygmées en RD Congo est déplorable et leur avenir incertain. La situation est déplorable. Premièrement, vu les rôles gardiens des peuples pygmées qu'ils jouent et qu'ils jouaient auparavant en tant que conservateurs naturels de la sauvegarde de la diversité bioculturelle, ce rôle consiste à participer pleinement, activement, entièrement et effectivement à tout programme de protection et conservation durable de l'environnement. Il est fort étonné de constater qu'en date du 5 février 2008, nous avons été informés par la publication de l'UNESCO, la signature d'une déclaration signée entre notre gouvernement d'une réserve de biosphère transfrontalière, signé entre la RD Congo, le Rwanda et l'Ouganda en date du 4 février 2008 avec le soutien du gouvernement de l'Espagne et de l'UNESCO. Ainsi, les communautés autochtones pygmées estiment que la mise en application de cette déclaration, qui s'est faite sans leur consultation, implication et sans considération de leurs intérêts, concourra à la violation de leurs droits les plus légitimes. Elle va même aller à la contre des traités internationaux que les parties ont signés et ratifiés, notamment la Charte africaine à son article 13 et 22 et la Déclaration universelle de l'UNESCO sur la diversité culturelle adoptée par la 31e conférence générale à Paris. Deuxièmement, l'exploitation désordonnée et clandestine des forêts de l'Ituri, sa conséquence sur le climat et le mode de vie des pygmées, laisse ces derniers perplexes. Ils assistent aujourd'hui impuissamment à cette exploitation désordonnée et clandestine à l'aide des tronçonneuses qui détruisent sans une quelconque norme leur espace de vie. Ces exploitants forestiers ayant reçu les concessions forestières après les moratoires fixés par le gouvernement ont peur que ces concessions soient récupérées dans les processus en cours de conversion des titres forestiers. Ainsi, les véritables gardiens de la forêt, Madame la Présidente, les pygmées, sont devenus et considérés aujourd'hui comme les manœuvres et transporteurs de bois pillés dans leur espace vital en Ituri. Madame la Présidente, il y a aussi le processus de zonage participatif longtemps réclamé par les organisations autochtones, tarde aussi à se concrétiser. Les moratoires sur les concessions d'exploitation industrielle de bois, instituées par le gouvernement congolais, et violé par certains exploitants forestiers, risque d'aboutir à un zonage de fait où tous les espaces appartenant aux autochtones pygmées seront déjà épuisés. Nous recommandons ceci à l'instance permanente, de demander à l'UNESCO et le gouvernement de l'Espagne ainsi qu'au gouvernement congolais ici présent des informations précises sur ces projets de biosphère déjà créés et comment ils comptent impliquer les autochtones pygmées et leurs associations respectives dans la mise en œuvre du projet. De demander au gouvernement congolais ainsi qu'à la Banque mondiale qui l'appuie, le maintien, l'extension, le respect du moratoire sur les nouvelles concessions forestières jusqu'au renforcement des capacités de la société civile congolaise ainsi qu'à l'administration locale sur cette matière précise. Jusqu'à un zonage participatif envie de définir les espaces qui reviendront aux communautés, à la conservation ainsi qu'à l'exploitation industrielle des bois. Je vous remercie, Madame la Présidente.
Thank you very much, Pacific Mukumba. I'd like now to call on Casey Camp, who will speak on behalf of the Indigenous Environmental Network and other organizations. And after her, I would like to call on Jeanine Leishram. So, Casey Camp, you have the floor. Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for the opportunity to address the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues. I'm Casey Camp Hornick, a member of the Ponca Nation of Oklahoma. I represent the Indigenous Environmental Network, affiliate organizations, and Canadian First Governments. Climate change is more than an environmental issue to Indigenous peoples. Our cultures are in crisis. The inability of governments to address the issue of climate change is tantamount to cultural genocide for our peoples. The UN and relevant international agencies must address these human rights violations immediately. We cannot wait. Climate change is a real issue in the communities that we come from. We must build upon the discussion of impacts and take action to create real solutions to climate change and to global warming now. Madam Chair, while there is a very justifiable increase in global interest on studying climate issues and debates on its solutions, it is business as usual with the expansion of oil, coal, and other fossil fuel developments within our homelands. The international scientific community has concluded that the burning of fossil fuels is the primary source of climate change. The Earth has already warmed by 0.76 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels. Scientists warn the 2-degree level is the tipping point where temperatures and weather events will be out of control with an acceleration of climate change and global warming. Scientists are now saying that we are almost at that tipping point within 10 years. for the well-being of our Mother Earth and the future generations. The world must move more aggressively than it is now towards a rigorous plan towards zero fossil fuel emissions by 2050. Conventional fossil fuel supplies are limited. Even if we tear up our Mother Earth to extract every last drop of coal, every shard of coal, tearing up the sacredness of our Mother Earth to get the last drops of oil is not sustainable and violates every principle of our indigenous original instructions. We are in solidarity with many other indigenous peoples of every region of our Mother Earth in demanding a worldwide moratorium on new exploration, extraction, and processing of fossil fuels on indigenous peoples' lands and territories. The UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples justified the following recommendation. The Permanent Forum through ECOSOC call on the UN General Assembly to convene an emergency world session to fully explore with all branches of the UN and relevant bodies, in particular UN CERD, the multiple impacts of climate change and its link to fossil fuel development and human rights of indigenous peoples, to include the topics of, but not limited to, social, economic, cultural, environmental, health, food security, land, water rights, and treaty rights. At this time, I would like to ask all my indigenous brothers and sisters affected by oil, gas, coal, refineries, and other fossil fuels to stand up, please. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank
permanent
you very
forum
much.
Members and delegates.
Thank you very much. I'd like to call now on Janine Laishram, and after her on Onel Masardule. Janine Laishram, you have the floor. Yes.
Respected Chairperson, members of the Permanent Forum, my indigenous elders, sisters, and brothers here today, Kurumjeri, good morning. I bring greeting from my people, Mitai, in the northeast region of India, and thanks to the indigenous people of this land for their gracious hospitality. I would like to express my profound concern about the inclusion of our forest in the carbon market through the mechanism known as reducing emissions from deforestation and degradation, REDD. RED will not benefit indigenous peoples, but in fact will result in more violation of indigenous peoples' rights. It will increase the violation of our rights to our land, territories, and resources, cause forced evictions, prevent access, and threaten indigenous agriculture practices, destroy biodiversity, cultural diversity, traditional livelihoods, and knowledge systems, and cause social conflicts under REDD rate. States and the carbon traders will take more control over our forest. We would like to further to inform the Permanent Forum that steps are already being taken in many countries, including India, sometimes using military power, to put in place legislation and programs that would enable dispossession of indigenous lands in favor of corporate and international NGO control as conservation parks and sanctuaries in anticipation of implementing RED projects. This legal policy initiative demonstrates clearly that RED would result in displacement of indigenous peoples and forest-dwelling communities and escalation of ethnic hostility as well as on a massive scale. Madam Chair, the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples was adopted by the General Assembly of the United Nations on September 13 of this year and consecrates fundamental rights of indigenous peoples which are relevant to the RED discussion, especially Article 10, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30, and 32. Given the threat to the indigenous peoples' rights that RED represents, we call on the United Nations Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues to recommend strongly the UNFCCC and UN Forum on Forest, concerned UN agencies such as UNEP, the World Bank, the Special Rapporteur on Human Rights, and fundamental freedoms of indigenous peoples and nation states that RED not be considered as a strategy to combat climate change, but in fact is in violation of the UN Declaration of Indigenous Peoples. Moreover, we also urge the Permanent Forum to recommend strongly to the Convention on Biological Diversity that implementation of the program of work on forest biodiversity prohibit RED. Mayam Butagachari, thank you.
Thank you very much. I'd like now to call on Onel Masardule, and after him, I'll call on Hayuberto Samangon. Onel Masardule, you have the floor.
Gracias, señora Presidente. Quiero intervenir a nombre de la Fundación para la Promoción del Conocimiento Indígena, del Consejo Indígena de Mesoamérica, Inland is Life, en tan importante tema como es el cambio climático. Algunos representantes de los pueblos indígenas nos reunimos los días 17 al 19 de marzo en La Paz, Bolivia, para tratar sobre el cambio climático, en la cual surgió la declaración llamada Collasuyo, donde manifestamos nuestra posición frente a las iniciativas que se están implementando sobre el secuestro de carbono, fondo de biocarbono, con el supuesto objetivo de reducir la emisión de carbono. Señora Presidente, a pesar de ser nosotros, los pueblos indígenas, quienes sufrimos desproporcionadamente los impactos actuales de cambio climático, ocasionado principalmente por la explotación desmesurada de los recursos naturales, somos marginados en cuanto a la atención emergente y el desarrollo de políticas y programas que contribuyan a mitigar los impactos de cambio climático. Estos cambios son el resultado de un modelo de desarrollo occidental basado en un capitalismo voraz que no contempla el respeto por la madre tierra. Reiteramos que los países industrializados son los únicos autores de estos cambios que están afectando profundamente a la madre tierra y, por ende, rechazamos todas las insinuaciones que responsabilice a nuestros pueblos indígenas. De igual manera, los participantes puntualizamos nuestros puntos de vista sobre el mercado de carbono, de la reducción de emisiones y de las falsas soluciones, diciendo lo siguiente. La implementación de las políticas de mitigación y adaptación propuestas por los organismos multilaterales, el sector privado, organismos internacionales, ONGs y gobiernos, etcétera, como son la generación de monocultivos, producción de biocombustibles, el secuestro de carbono, reducción de emisiones por deforestación evitada y áreas protegidas, están siendo planteadas como soluciones, pero en cambio están afectando el ejercicio de nuestros derechos y atentando nuestra existencia. Por tanto, recomendamos las siguientes propuestas. 1. Participación plena y efectiva en el proceso del Convenio Marco de las Naciones Unidas sobre el Cambio Climático, Convenio sobre Diversidad Biológica, Área Protegida, entre otras. 2. Establecimiento de un grupo de expertos indígenas sobre cambio climático y conocimientos tradicionales dentro del Convenio Marco de las Naciones Unidas de Cambio Climático. 3. Coordinar con las agencias y organismos especializados de Naciones Unidas, como el CBD, Convenio Marco de Naciones Unidas de Cambio Climático, UNESCO, FAO, UNICEF, GEF, Foro Permanente de Cuestiones Indígenas y PNUD, y otros que se consideren relevantes con el propósito de implementar acciones directas y articuladas sobre cambio climático y pueblos indígenas. 4. Que el Foro Permanente recomiende a la Oficina de Alto Comisionado de las Naciones Unidas que el relator especial sobre la situación de los derechos humanos y las libertades fundamentales de los pueblos indígenas elabore un informe sobre los impactos de cambio climático en los pueblos indígenas. 5. Los proyectos y programas relacionados a la mitigación de cambio climático y adaptación deben ser: A. Con pleno respeto a los derechos colectivos de los pueblos indígenas. B. Con una consulta basada con el consentimiento libre, previo e informado. C. Estar sujetos al lineamiento de la Declaración de Naciones Unidas para los Derechos de los Pueblos Indígenas y al Convenio 169 de la OIT, así como otros instrumentos relevantes, tanto en ámbitos nacionales como internacionales. D. Deben responder a las necesidades, realidades y prioridades de los pueblos indígenas. E. Flexibilizar y ampliar los mecanismos financieros para que los pueblos indígenas tengamos acceso a los fondos de adaptación, creación de capacidades, transferencia de tecnología y otros. Muchas gracias, señora Presidente.
Thank you very much, Onel Mazardoli. And now call on Huberto Samangun from the International Alliance of Indigenous Peoples and Tribal Peoples of the Tropical Forest. You have the floor, sir. Yeah.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am speaking on behalf of the International Indigenous Peoples Forum on Climate Change. The International Caucus of Indigenous People represent following the UNFCCC meetings. The IIPCC acknowledges with great appreciation the decision of this forum to focus on the theme of Indigenous people on climate change. We endorse the various documents prepared and submitted by the various organizations and institutions that highlight the following. Indigenous peoples are most vulnerable to the negative impacts of climate change, in particular those in the Arctic, small island states, and high altitude areas. Acknowledge Indigenous people's knowledge in climate change adaptation. As yet, there are no sufficient mechanisms to cope with the impacts of climate change. We would like to share with you some concern from the latest discussion on the Indigenous People Forum on Climate Change, which convened in Bali, Indonesia, on the occasion of the 13th session of the Conference of Parties United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change. First, the IPCC is an open forum for IPS who are interested in climate change issues. It is established in 2000 during the SABSTA 13 in Lyon, France. Since then, this forum regularly convenes prior to any COPs and subsidiary bodies meetings of the UNFCCC. It has also convened training seminars on the various issues related to climate change and has prepared case studies and statements. Over the course of 7 years, Indigenous voices and concern have hardly been given the opportunity to be heard in the UNFCCC Kyoto Protocol processes. While the impacts to Indigenous communities are drastically increasing, the International Indigenous People Forum on Climate Change has identified the following as major concerns. First, lack of recognition of IPS and our vital rights and role in reducing impact from climate change within the UNFCCC and Kyoto Protocol processes. Second, lack of mechanism to facilitate our full and effective participation in global deliberation and decision taking and at national implementation of climate change adaptation and mitigation schemes. Third, as a direct effect of this non-recognition of Indigenous peoples in the UNFCCC, many adaptation and mitigation policies and projects promoted a solution to climate change, like market-based mechanism, carbon trading, agrofuels, the clean development mechanism, and the current emerging issues such as RED, R-E-D-D, are proving problematic and potentially disastrous for Indigenous people. These false solutions to climate change are causing more violation of Indigenous people's rights and our lands. Territories and resources are further threatened, and as well as our basic human rights. The International Indigenous People Forum on Climate Change welcomed the adaptation of UN Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous Peoples and recommend that it be based as an overall framework in formulating climate change mitigation and adaptation plans. We asked the United Nations Permanent Forum on this issue forward this recommendation urgently to UNFCCC. On full and effective participation of indigenous people and on mitigation and adaptation, we request the conference of the parties of UNFCCC and Kyoto Protocol to recognize and take action to curb the adverse impact of climate change on indigenous peoples and to reaffirm adaptation and mitigation schemes on project and promote a solution to climate change that devastates indigenous peoples and our lands and territories. To conclude, Madam Chair, we request the Indigenous People Forum on Forest, United Nations Permanent Forum on this issue, to conduct an evaluation of the first phase of implementation of the Kyoto Protocol and its impacts on indigenous people, to promote the role of indigenous people's knowledge in climate change mitigation, to encourage donor agencies to provide funds for indigenous people to capacity building and climate change, and to conduct more studies on indigenous people and climate change. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Huberto Samangon. I'd like now to ask Larson Bill, and after him, Mina Susana Setra. Larson Bill, who is going to speak on Western Shoshone Defense Project and other organizations. You have the floor, sir.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the Permanent Forum. My name is Larson Bill from the Shoshone Nation, located in the United States. Today I'm here to talk to this forum and all indigenous people on the world conditions, global warming, and the rights of indigenous peoples. Today we face unjust laws made by man imposed upon us and our traditions. The resource taken from our lands are the four elements of the Creator. Laws, land, air, water, and sun. Today they call these resources, which are taken by exploitation and money. Mother Earth is not a resource. She is the source. Extracting her parts and using them in a bad way, creating an unbalance of the environment. Global warming is a result of misuse of the four sacred elements for life, used in a bad way, not the indigenous way. They say climate change is a result of unbalanced environment. We say that we are all being called upon to assist the environment during the difficult time using indigenous ways to educate the violators that they must change their behavior. All nations of the world are now facing aftershocks and looming environmental devastations at the hands of transnational companies who tear apart communities where they operate. In most areas of the world, including even the United States, these non-human entities are more powerful than the governments, and they use their money and influence to create and maintain laws that legitimize the theft and destruction of indigenous lands and peoples, thereby expanding the devastation impacts of climate change and global warming. We Shoshone people have met with some of these companies. They talk about social responsibility, but just like the U.S. government, they only want to apologize and then continue the business as usual, and maybe just a momentary benefit trickling into the ground. There is no accountability and no real change in these industries of extraction and energy consumption. We extend our appreciation to the Committee of Elimination of Racial Discrimination, which, in its concluding observation and recommendations to the U.S. in 2007 and to Canada in March 2008, have taken a bold step in informing the U.S. and Canada that they must regulate their transnational corporations impacting indigenous communities outside of their borders. In the following, with the CERS recommendations and in order to fulfill its mandate under Article 42 of the Declaration, we call upon the Permanent Forum to urgently address the impacts of transnationals on climate change and indigenous peoples by, one, requesting written report from the Office of Special Representative on Business and Human Rights and Special Rapporteurs on Indigenous Peoples with identification of transnationals which threaten the basic fibers of human rights and self-determination of Indigenous people. This report is to be completed prior to the 8th session of the Permanent Forum with adequate time for consideration and comments by the Indigenous Regional Caucuses. Calling upon ECOSOC, we advise members state to adequately regulate and monitor the activities of these respective transnationals and make preliminary reports back to their actions by the General Assembly session. And three, taking all further action necessary to immediate attention to all role playing by transnationals in the impacts of climate change and indigenous people. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. I'd like now to call on Mina Susana Setra, who will speak on behalf of Aliansi Masyarakat Adat Nusantara, and after her, Edith Bastidas. Mina Susana Setra, you have the floor. Yes, you have the floor.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. The politics of climate change is embedded in an unequal relationship that creates global and national injustice. Therefore, it should be on the advocacy agenda of indigenous peoples and other civil society groups in the world. In addition to their engagement at the global and national level, indigenous peoples should actively participate in mitigation and adaptation efforts through local actions. However, initiative on mitigation and adaptation to climate change can potentially weaken further indigenous institutions that were standardized as the state policies on village or local governance. It is a crucial level now to empower indigenous communities and revitalize their institution by providing enabling environment so that they have technical capacities to cope with potential impacts of climate change. Recognition of indigenous territories is very important in enabling them to minimize the impacts to their lives. Establishment of information center, mapping and planning of indigenous territories, and the documentation of indigenous knowledge are urgently needed in maintaining the integrity of indigenous territories in the context of mitigation and adaptation to climate change. Therefore, we would like to recommend following prerequisites: indigenous people's demand for mitigation and adaptation on climate change. Initiative and project related to climate change should employ right-based approach by adopting the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. The declaration consists of key principles of the rights of indigenous peoples throughout the world that should guide anyone working on indigenous issues. As the declaration is a comprehensive document, initiative and projects on mitigation and adaptation of climate change should give special attention to some crucial issues. First, all initiatives and projects should recognize and respect indigenous people's rights to land, territories, and resources. For those existing schemes targeted on forests that mostly belongs in indigenous lands and territories. Second, all initiatives and projects should obtain free, prior, and informed consent and provide enabling environments for full and meaningful participation of indigenous peoples in all steps of the project. Third, the current initiative tends to apply global approaches that and disregard the complexity of local problems. Indigenous peoples will most likely suffer from such approaches, since those will trade their own traditional knowledge and which is not yet even fully recognized. Therefore, all of those initiatives and projects should encourage and provide space for indigenous peoples to develop mitigation and adaptation alternatives based on their indigenous knowledge and practices. Last, indigenous peoples are often left out in gaining benefits from any financial mechanisms. For these reasons, the initiative should adopt community, climate, and biodiversity standard as minimum standard in benefit sharing. Finally, the UN Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues should engage formally to the UN UNFCCC and intensively involved in other related UN bodies, agencies, and international financial institutions to ensure that all of these prerequisites is recognized and fulfilled. Last but not least, specific recommendations we want to draw to Indonesian government. First, the government should change its forestry law number 41, 1999, as the most important law directly related to the climate change mitigation. It should clearly reflect that the rights of indigenous peoples to their customary forests. Second, the government should change its plantation law number 18 of 2004. This law is not recognized the rights of indigenous peoples on land, territories, and natural resources. Meanwhile, this law is tend to be used by the government and entrepreneurs for the reason of climate change adaptation by supplying biofuels. And the third, the government should implement the law number 27/2007 on coastal and small islands management. This law recognizes the rights of indigenous peoples for managing coastal and small islands and recognizes indigenous knowledge as an important aspect for the protection of the coastal areas and small islands. The government should implement as well as provide technical assistance and funds for the indigenous communities in small islands and coastal areas to promote local initiatives based on their indigenous knowledge as part of climate change adaptation effort. We submit our full report as well to the UN Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mina Susana Cetra. I now call on Edith Bastidas and after her, Malia Nubrega. Edith Bastidas, you have the floor. Yes, you have the floor. You can just press
yeah,
your...
I get it. I will give you this one.
Yes, you just press your microphone.
Sure. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Can somebody help her, presser?
Okay. Just press. Gracias, señora presidenta. Voy a leer una declaración colectiva. Nosotros, los participantes y representantes de pueblos y organizaciones indígenas, reunidos en Santa Cruz de la Sierra, Bolivia, en el marco de las discusiones que se vienen realizando por parte de los estados y organismos internacionales multilaterales sobre los desafíos del cambio climático, consideramos que los pueblos indígenas siempre hemos mantenido una relación de armonía con la Madre Tierra, basada en nuestra cosmovisión, principios, conocimientos ancestrales y prácticas de equilibrio y respeto a todas las formas de vida y pervivencia, lo cual confiere a nuestros pueblos un papel fundamental en el mantenimiento de los ecosistemas donde vivimos. Y tomando en consideración y reclamando la plena implementación de la Declaración de las Naciones Unidas sobre los Derechos de los Pueblos Indígenas por parte de los Estados, los organismos internacionales y de la sociedad en conjunto, resolvemos. Primero, reconocer la importancia del trabajo realizado en diversos encuentros y las declaraciones suscritas por los pueblos indígenas en distintas regiones del mundo, para alertar sobre las consecuencias del cambio climático sobre la vida de los pueblos indígenas y sus mecanismos de mitigación. Valoramos en particular las recomendaciones incluidas en la Declaración del Collasuyo suscrita en La Paz, Bolivia, y la Conferencia sobre Pueblos Indígenas y Cambio Climático realizado en Copenhague, Dinamarca. Segundo, demandar que en cualquier proceso de debate y decisión relacionados con el fenómeno del cambio climático y de las medidas y programas de mitigación, se tomen como marco jurídico prioritario los instrumentos internacionales de derechos humanos, específicamente la Declaración de las Naciones Unidas sobre los Derechos de los Pueblos Indígenas. Tercero, exigir que se asegure la participación plena y efectiva de los pueblos indígenas para garantizar que sus preocupaciones y propuestas sean considerados por la Conferencia de las Partes sobre Cambio Climático y otros organismos subsidiarios como el órgano subsidiario de asesoramiento científico y tecnológico y el panel intergubernamental sobre cambio climático y en especial en las negociaciones en curso sobre los acuerdos postprotocolo de Kioto. Cuarto, exigir a los gobiernos de los principales países consumidores de combustibles fósiles reducir sus niveles de consumo y cumplir con las metas del protocolo de Kioto para reducir la emisión de gases de efecto invernadero en los países de origen de los mismos. Quinto,
proponer al foro permanente coordinar con otros organismos, incluido el mecanismo de expertos del Consejo de Derechos Humanos y el relator especial sobre la situación de los derechos humanos y las libertades fundamentales de los pueblos indígenas, la realización del estudio y propuestas sobre las amenazas que se ciernen sobre los pueblos indígenas, el impacto de las políticas y programas de mitigación y la especial vulnerabilidad ante el cambio climático. Sexto, promover y apoyar las iniciativas de los pueblos indígenas para realizar actividades que fortalezcan la conservación de los conocimientos tradicionales indígenas relacionados con la tierra, territorios, medio ambiente y biodiversidad. Octavo, solicitar al foro permanente la promoción y difusión de información relacionada con el cambio climático y las experiencias específicas y concretas de ejercer los derechos de los pueblos indígenas en el contexto de las políticas y programas sobre el cambio climático. Finalmente, señora presidenta, saludamos la aprobación del proyecto de Constitución Política del Estado Boliviano que establece y garantiza los derechos al medio ambiente y los derechos de los pueblos indígenas. Con base en esta experiencia, alentamos a los estados a impulsar procesos de desarrollo normativo e institucional para elaborar y concretar políticas públicas sobre el cambio climático que atiendan cabalmente los derechos de los pueblos indígenas, dado en Santa Cruz de la Tierra de la Sierra, Bolivia, el 4 de abril de 2008. Gracias, señora presidenta.
Thank you very much. I'd like now to call on Malia Nubrega and after her Gunbrit Retter. Malia Nubrega, you have the floor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a collective intervention of Hawaii and the Northwest Pacific regarding climate change. The impacts of global climate change in the Northwest Pacific Ocean and the Hawaiian Archipelago are severe and irreversible. Regarding coral bleaching, recent studies conducted by scientists from seven states in the United States confirm that rising carbon emissions will decimate the Earth's coral reefs by the year 2050. Fossil fuel consumption and production increases carbon dioxide to the atmosphere and carbon absorption into the ocean. As the ocean becomes more acidic, coral calcification is inhibited and the coral dies. Scientists predict that as the temperature of the ocean rises, there will be a corresponding increase in heat-tolerant corals, decreasing reef life that are dependent on corals which survive in cooler temperatures. Carbon levels in the Pacific are 380 parts per million. If this figure rises to 500 parts per million, the Pacific reefs will dissolve. 50% of the world's sea life will be killed, and water quality will erode due to algae and plankton blooms. Variations in the ocean temperature continue to fluctuate as a result of global warming. In the Pacific, we are experiencing an increase in the number of coral bleaching events. These occur when ocean temperatures rise for a short period, causing the coral to expel the algae which live within them and which are their source of food. If the temperature returns to normal in a few weeks, the coral can survive. If not, the coral will die. Of great concern to Hawaii and the Northwest Pacific regions is the expansion of what scientists refer to as the North Pacific Subtropical Desert. This term refers to the dead zones, which are biological deserts in the ocean. Data gathered over a 9-year period from the SeaStar spacecraft by the National Marine Fisheries Service in Honolulu indicates that in the past few years, the Pacific Ocean dead zones have expanded rapidly and now extend into the waters of the Northwest Hawaiian Archipelago. These dead zones now covers 40% of the Earth's surface and in 9 years have expanded 10 to 25 times faster than global warming models predicted. The largest ecosystems in the ocean basins are large-scale regions of winds and ocean currents with low chlorophyll for plant and animal growth. From June 1998 to February 2007, the ocean dead zones in the Pacific and Atlantic expanded by 15%, about 6.6 million square kilometers. Scientists acknowledge that the rapid expansion of low surface chlorophyll in the four Pacific gears indicate that global warming is the likely cause. These have direct impacts on Native Hawaiians and the peoples of the Northwest Pacific. As the ocean's waters have warmed, Hawaii and the Northwest Archipelago have experienced stronger, longer, and more frequent storms, as well as changes in temperature and rainfall. Data gathered over a 40-year period verifies that storms have doubled in warm periods. These data are supported by the findings of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. The IPCC report also noted a corresponding and severe impact on forest diversity, specifically that hurricane-induced mortality of trees is 7 times higher than tree mortality during non-hurricane periods. As temperatures have risen in Hawaii, we have seen a spread of bird malaria to upper elevations and increasing threats to our few remaining endemic birds. The situation has become so critical that the United States Fish and Wildlife Service has advised resource managers to evaluate, design, and implement conservation programs to address the predicted impact of climate change, because the ramifications of climate change could derail the recovery of Hawaii's endangered species. The decrease in rainfall that has accompanied the rise in temperature has caused drought throughout the archipelago, and county water use restrictions and rationing are imposed on all islands with regularity. Sea level rise is resulting in coastal erosion, inundation, and saltwater intrusion into the freshwater lenses and coastal agricultural zones. There is corresponding threat to our indigenous food sources. We thank the forum experts for the excellent report on the impact of climate change mitigation measures on indigenous peoples and their territories and lands, and we urge the forum to adopt and implement the following recommendations. Number one, that the forum actively participate in the forthcoming processes under the UNFCCC and other related processes in order to raise issues critical to indigenous peoples in this fora. And two, that the forum undertake in conjunction with the Human Rights Council mechanism and the interagency support group an effort to determine whether climate change policies and projects adhere to the standards in the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. Mahalo nui.
Thank you very much, Malia Nobrega. I'd like to call now on Gunbrit Retter, who's speaking on behalf of the Indigenous Women's Biodiversity Network. You have the floor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm making this statement on behalf of the Indigenous Women's Biodiversity Network, the network of Indigenous women active in the work in environmental rights fora. We have been especially involved in the work of the Convention on Biological Diversity. We wish to make this intervention as not only are Indigenous women the most vulnerable to, but are also the best poised to work to positively curb the negative effects of climate change. First of all, we wish to recognize that we are on the traditional lands of the Haudenosaunee and wish to thank the traditional occupants of this land for their hospitality. Madam Chair, Indigenous women have a vital role in the conservation and sustainable use of biological diversity and in regards to maintaining Indigenous peoples' traditional knowledge, cultures and languages, which we pass on from generation to generation. Indigenous women are concerned that inappropriate policies cause resource abuse, climate change, foster extractive industries and overharvesting, all resulting in the continued loss of biodiversity. This biodiversity loss causes grave social, political, economic, cultural, environmental, and health problems for Indigenous peoples. Indigenous women have a role in the transmission of knowledge from the past to the future generations. This link ensures the strengthening of our cultural values and our cosmovisions. These values support the empowerment of governance mechanisms, sustainable trade and economic systems. In this regard, Indigenous women should be protected from global forces of commercial and capitalist encroachment that colonizes Indigenous systems of economic, political, social and cultural governance. The traditional knowledge, innovation, and practices of indigenous women are vast. Our specialized experience has made us midwives, spiritual leaders, healers, herbalists, and botanists within our peoples and beyond. Our knowledge, use, and control of medicinal plants must be protected from misuse and misappropriation, including studies, research, and commercialization of efforts. Sorry. They must be protected from the negative impacts of climate change. We recognize that indigenous knowledge has contributed to humanity in regards to food security and via the many indigenous medicines used throughout the world. Our right to keep collecting, saving, and exchanging our natural seeds must be protected. This is how we have been able to feed our peoples for generations. Indigenous women are the key providers of food and have a crucial role in protecting our natural food resources in order to overcome poverty and hunger. As climate change will continue to affect food security, this is also a crucial aspect for Indigenous women. The industrial activities that have caused global warming have resulted in prolonged droughts and arid and semi-arid areas, causing loss of life and disrupting nomadic ways of life. Furthermore, climate change is causing the melting of the Arctic ice, a rising of sea level, causing flooding of lands and islands. These factors have exacerbated poverty and turned many indigenous peoples, especially indigenous women and children, into environmental refugees. This results in our displacement and relocation from our lands and homes, thereby forcing us to leave our communities and take on the task of building new communities elsewhere. The effects of climate change are multifaceted: social, political, economic, as well as environmental. By recognizing that women are key agents of environmental transformation, we also counter the gender inequalities that render climate change especially devastating to women. Madam Chair, the full and effective participation of Indigenous women is critical so that we are active participants and decision makers at every stage regarding the vital issues of biodiversity conservation and climate change. As Indigenous women, we are ready to take our part of the responsibility in addressing these serious concerns, and the Indigenous Women's Biodiversity Network will commit to working on positive solutions. In closing, we, the Indigenous Women's Biodiversity Network, have four recommendations to make to the Permanent Forum. One, that the Forum recognizes the crucial role of Indigenous women and Indigenous youth in developing mitigation and adaptation measures, and that our participation in the necessary fora and decision-making processes where these issues are addressed be facilitated. To such end, the Forum should also help facilitate the capacity building of Indigenous women in this regard. Second, that the Forum actively participates in the forthcoming processes under the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change and other related processes in order to create visibility and raise issues critical to Indigenous peoples and these fora. Further, they should ensure that a working group on Indigenous peoples...
Can you conclude your statement?
Yeah, climate change and be established within the UNFCCC. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There are two others, but we will submit them in writing.
Thank you very much. Now I'd like to call on Laura Kamwin, who is going to speak on behalf of the Kichinamai Kusib and other organizations. Laura Kamwin, you have the floor, and after her, Joji Carino of the Asian Indigenous Women's Network. You have the floor, Laura Kamwin. Is she here? Is she in the room?
Watch here.
Yeah, okay.
Kichinamai Kusib Inuk, watch here. Kidikuna, Takinamagayak, Miguchi Gunawe. Kapagit na mo siyab, chitabachumyag, wigaysag, dakinan. My name is Laura Comwind. I'm from Kichinamai Kusib Inuk. Dear Madam Chair, I make this statement on behalf of Chief Donnie Morse, Deputy Chief Jack McKay, Sam McKay, Bruce Sagakeep, and Daryl Sinwap, and Cecilia Begg of Kitchenimmegsabeek Nation, KI as known by outsiders. With regard to climate change and biodiversity, it is essential that as Indigenous peoples, we have the security and protection when we work to protect our land, air, and water. In our territory, we are witnessing climate change now with changes in the ecosystem and our winters turning to rain rather than snowpack. We have mining proposed in our territory. We've discussed this as a peoples and decided that now is not the time for this activity. Our water is more important than industrial development. Our leadership supported this decision. Rather than honoring our leadership, the Ontario government has now jailed our chief and council. They sit in jail now as we sit here in New York City. This is the kind of tough situation Indigenous peoples always find ourselves when we stand up for the land title and treaty rights. How are we supposed to protect the sustainability of our land if our leadership is imprisoned when they try to do so? KI is a signatory to the 1929 adhesion to Treaty No. 9. And our flag shows the spirit and intent of our treaty, yellow for as long as the sun shines, green for as long as the grass grows, and blue for as long as the water flows. In the middle of our flag is a trout to signify sustenance for our peoples. All this will be taken away if the mining development was to go ahead. We, the peoples of Kitchenimmegsabeek and Inuwak, are peoples of the land. We have a legal and moral obligation to protect for our future generations. And we ask the forum to do what it can to ensure the safety of our leaders as they work to protect sustainability of our land sources, life sources, during this time of climate change. In particular, too, support the connection that Indigenous values, knowledge, and activities are the environmental measurement that any commercial and industrial activity must be held accountable to in order to preserve the ecological biodiversity. Support Indigenous people's rights to free and prior and informed consent as the basis of protecting the ecological biodiversity of their territories. Condemn the violations of the Government of Canada and Ontario and call for the immediate and unconditional release of the leadership of Kitchenimmegsabeek and Inuwak. Miigwech.
Very much. I'd like now to call on Georgie Carino, who will speak on behalf of the Tuba Asian Indigenous Women's Network. You have the floor.
Thank you very much, Madam Chairperson. This joint statement is being made on behalf of the Asian Indigenous Women's Network, the African Indigenous Women's Organization, the Indigenous Information Network, and Tebteba Foundation. It is also endorsed by the Asian Indigenous People's Caucus. I wish to make the following recommendations and reflections on Agenda Item 3. I shall begin with the recommendations. First, the UN Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues should champion the full inclusion of Indigenous peoples in climate processes at all levels, valuing the distinct contributions of elders, women, men, and youth. In its championing role for Indigenous peoples, the UN Permanent Forum should also support Indigenous peoples to carry out educational programs on climate change and to openly and robustly engage in all climate talks and debates, and to highlight the central importance of traditional cultural and spiritual values in addressing the climate crisis. All actors to respect the self-determination of Indigenous peoples to decide local mitigation and adaptation measures in their lands and territories. Donors to ensure that all climate funds uphold the rights and well-being of Indigenous peoples and deliver sustainable development, climate, environment, and cultural benefits. Governments to work with Indigenous authorities to implement the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, upholding the rights to free prior informed consent to all climate mitigation and adaptation programs and projects. In making these recommendations, we would like to offer the following considerations. The UNFCCC is one of the few UN bodies resistant to the full and effective participation of indigenous peoples in its various mechanisms and processes. The UN Permanent Forum must champion the fullest inclusion of indigenous peoples in the UNFCCC by building on the best practices of the sister conventions like the CBD, the UN Convention to Combat Desertification, and the Ramsar Convention on Wetlands, which all value the traditional knowledge and contributions of indigenous peoples and local communities. The UN Permanent Forum must do the same with other climate processes and initiatives, including the various climate funds of the World Bank. The democratization of governance structures is imperative to adequately address the development, environment, and climate crisis. A range of participatory and expert mechanisms and processes addressing local mitigation and adaptation measures, which build on the traditional knowledge of indigenous peoples, are urgently needed. Indigenous peoples must robustly engage all climate talks and debates, including on the limitations of emissions trading as a central tool for climate solutions, but also exploring all options for climate solutions which deliver local benefits for indigenous peoples, sustainable development, ecosystem health, and cultural well-being. All actors, including environment and development NGOs, donors, and the private sector, must respect the self-determination of indigenous peoples to decide local mitigation and adaptation measures in their lands and territories. Pressure must not be exerted on indigenous peoples to influence or narrow down our choices in studying community options. To exclude indigenous peoples from controversial debates, such as carbon trading, is to perpetuate the marginalization of our valuable contributions to these climate talks. Cultural and spiritual values and indigenous knowledge, together with the best available science and technologies, must interact to shift the world into a more sustainable path. Increased collaboration and intercultural dialogue is needed across diverse forms of knowledge to arrive at socially and culturally acceptable solutions. Donors must avoid harm, but they must also aspire to do good in the design and use of climate funds. Lessons learned from the failures of top-down projects in development and conservation must not be repeated in climate funding. Opportunities exist to uphold the rights and well-being of indigenous peoples and to deliver sustainable development, climate, environment, and cultural benefits. Governments must follow through the UN General Assembly adoption of the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples by working in partnership with indigenous authorities towards its implementation. Such partnership engenders a virtuous cycle of local stewardship, self-determined development, national and global benefits. The UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples is a critical and significant tool in addressing multiple contemporary problems, and as such, constitutes a universal value of our times. Thank you very much, Madam Chairperson, for this opportunity.
Thank you very much. I'd like to now call on Cheryl Maloney, who will speak on behalf of the Mi'kmaq Grand Council, and after her, Joseph Itongwa, who will speak from the Congo Basin. Cheryl Maloney, you have the floor.
Thank you. Honorable Chair and members of the UN Permanent Forum, would like to congratulate you on your appointment. I'm here on behalf of the Mi'kmaq Grand Council and supported by the Native Women's Association of Canada, the Assembly of First Nations, and the Union of Nova Scotia Indians. The Mi'kmaq territory spans over five Canadian provinces, two states, and two countries. The United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, Article 42, recognizes the role of the United Nations Permanent Forum in implementing the Declaration. The North American Caucus Report, CRP4, supports implementation and realization of the declaration. The Mi'kmaq Grand Council and 16 member communities request that the United Nations Permanent Forum invite the Special Rapporteur on Indigenous Issues and the Special Rapporteur on Human Rights to investigate the human rights violations against the Mi'kmaq in regard to legislative and administrative barriers within the state system in relation to mobility, sustenance, and safety issues, restricting their ability to adapt and mitigate potentially disastrous effects of climate change on an already vulnerable society. We also request the permanent forum to call on states to allow for the full and effective participation of vulnerable Indigenous populations in developing state adaptation and mitigation strategies, especially in regards to water rights and land use management, with the burden of supporting the participation of Indigenous peoples to be shared by the responsible parties to the causes of climate change. Mobility and migration issues are integral to successful adaptation and mitigation of the Mi'kmaq to potentially life-threatening impacts due to climate change. The restrictions on these rights pose significant human rights implications and is inconsistent with the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, Articles 7, Articles 8, A, B, C, D, E, and Article 10, Article 20, 1 and 2, and Article 32, 1 and 3. The Mi'kmaq have continuously pursued their right to free mobility and access to resources in the traditional territory. From our early submissions to King George in the early 1760s, which led up to the Royal Proclamation of 1763, to many years of costly litigation. The Mi'kmaq spent over 30 years in litigation, which had culminated in the Supreme Court of Canada decision in R versus Marshall in 1999. The Marshall decision recognized the validity of the treaties, the right to hunt and fish, and also recognized a commercial component to fish. Unfortunately, the legal victories were never implemented within Canadian law. The legislative and bureaucratic arms of the government did not change domestic laws or policies to reflect the Supreme Court decisions. Instead, the Mi'kmaq faced violence, criminal charges, and incarceration for attempting to access resources in their territory. In fact, for the first time in the history of Canada, the Supreme Court took an unprecedented step to provide a unilateral clarification of their previous decision, which had in effect weakened the wind by restricting access to resources and waters adjacent to state-run Indian reservations. In many of those communities, the food sources and water supplies are contaminated and not sufficient for sustenance purposes. The innovation and skilled technology of the Mi'kmaq supported water rights of the Mi'kmaq to activities both within the territory and over the surrounding oceans. In fact, the skilled boat building of the Mi'kmaq designed vessels provided transportation of whole communities from the island of Newfoundland to Nova Scotia, a trek of 20 miles over the harsh Atlantic Ocean, while still protecting the integrity and security of all species within the territory. The Mi'kmaq seeks the support of the United Nations Permanent Forum in their efforts to share in both the environmental management and sustenance activities in Mi'kma'ki, consistent with Article 32 of the Declaration. On behalf of the Mi'kmaq Nation, I request this statement be reflected in the report of this session, and thank you.
Thank you very much. I'd like now to call on Joseph Itungwa, the joint statement from the Congo Basin. This is number 58 on the list. Joseph Itungwa, you have the floor.
Merci, Madame la Présidente. J'interviens ici dans le cadre de la représentation des autochtones du bassin du Congo. Après la précédente intervention dans le cadre des autochtones de la RDC. Madame la Présidente, permettez de vous présenter au nom des peuples autochtones du deuxième massif forestier du monde, qui est le bassin du Congo, nos sincères remerciements pour les efforts que vous ne cessez de fournir en vue de consolider cet espace international qui nous permet de présenter chaque année nos diverses préoccupations relatives à notre vie, notre avenir et celui de nos futures générations. Madame la Présidente, le massif forestier du bassin du Congo et dans mon pays, la République démocratique du Congo, couvre plus de la moitié des forêts, constitue un important réservoir de carbone. Les estimations faites par The World Whole Research Center, une organisation internationale de recherche scientifique dans notre pays, environ 17 milliards de tonnes de carbone sont stockées par les arbres de nos forêts, ce qui aide à atténuer les effets des changements climatiques dont les causes sont indépendantes des actions des autochtones. Madame la Présidente, la préservation de ces forêts jusqu'à l'état actuel, où elles les rendent services très considérables pour l'humanité, connaît une très grande contribution des autochtones des pays de cette région. Que je cite le Congo-Brazzaville, le Cameroun, le Gabon, la Guinée équatoriale, la République centrafricaine et la République démocratique du Congo. Et ceci de par les techniques et pratiques reconnues mondialement non destructives de la biodiversité, que je ne veux plus citer ici, Madame, parce que mes prédécesseurs les ont déjà évoquées. Madame la Présidente, grande est notre inquiétude de constater que plusieurs décisions sur les forêts, ces forêts ne prennent pas en compte les rôles de protecteurs que continuent à jouer les autochtones de cette région qui sont déjà victimes de la mauvaise gouvernance du secteur forestier, du manque de rétribution équitable des revenus générés par les ressources naturelles et autres services environnementaux, et ceci en violation des dispositions de la Convention sur la diversité biologique en rapport avec les peuples autochtones. Victimes aussi de la violation des responsabilités et droits associés à la protection de la nature et de la diversité, retirés et transférés aux États seuls décideurs. Par ailleurs, les autochtones de la région du bassin du Congo veulent savoir leur part dans les processus de négociation et de compensation aux initiatives de la réduction des émissions dues à la déforestation et à la dégradation des sols. Car, Madame la Présidente, la déforestation évitée dans cette région et particulièrement en République démocratique du Congo est principalement le résultat de la manière dont les autochtones ont protégé les ressources naturelles, ce qui nécessite la reconnaissance, la compensation conformément aux standards de la Déclaration des Nations Unies sur les droits des populations autochtones. Pour terminer, Madame la Présidente, nous recommandons à l'instance permanente et aux organisations internationales d'appui aux autochtones d'expliquer davantage à la communauté internationale et plus à l'organe technique des Nations Unies chargé de la Convention cadre sur le changement climatique, la grande nécessité de placer le rôle des autochtones au centre des discussions des travaux internationaux traitant de la question du changement climatique. Aux États du bassin du Congo de considérer les autochtones comme principaux acteurs dans toutes les questions relatives à la forêt, leurs milieux de vie et domaines professionnels, nous les invitons à un dialogue sincère avec les autochtones dans le cadre du Forum international d'Afrique centrale et dont la première session a eu lieu en avril 2007 à Nifondo, Congo-Brazzaville, organisée par les réseaux des populations autochtones pour la conservation durable des écosystèmes forestiers d'Afrique centrale. Je vous remercie.
Thank you very much, Joseph Itungwa. And our last speaker for this morning is Bev Manton, who will speak on behalf of the Australian Aboriginal Caucus. You have the floor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land we meet on here today. This intervention is made on behalf of a number of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander organisations from Australia present at this forum. We begin by applauding the prompt signing of the Kyoto Protocol by the newly elected Australian Government and its stated intention to formally indicate its support for the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples in the near future. Both provide a platform for addressing climate change. Madam Chair, climate change raises distinct challenges for Indigenous peoples, our cultures, our lands and our resources. It poses a threat to the health, cultures and livelihoods of Indigenous peoples. This occurs in coastal and flood-prone areas, salt inundation of freshwater supplies, changes to mangroves and fire regimes, coastal erosion and rising sea levels, as well as for those Indigenous communities affected by long-term drought and desertification, among other impacts. In southeastern Australia, for example, the Murray-Darling Basin is under severe ecological stress. Urgent attention is required to arrest this decline and restore vital ecosystems before the entire river basin becomes agriculturally barren and/or uninhabitable. There are strong indications of population shifts out of the basin and significant adverse effects on Indigenous peoples' access to country and cultural economy. A vital part of any response to climate change must include justice around water, including adequate water allocations for cultural and economic purposes. In addition, the Torres Strait Islands are also currently experiencing climate change impacts, specifically through rising sea levels. Torres Strait Islander culture is intimately connected to their sea country, and being engaged in traditional cultural practices is rooted in their environment. Extreme weather events and sea levels rise threatens land and personal property. Changing climatic patterns affect the viability of food and water resources, which impact directly on the life and health of Indigenous people and associated intergenerational transfer of knowledge. Cultural heritage and traditional knowledge may also be lost or devalued as a result of climate change. The dietary health of Aboriginal communities are also predicted to suffer as plants and animals that make up our traditional diets could be at risk of extinction through climate change. Aboriginal communities are particularly at risk from waterborne and vector-borne diseases, especially in the northern parts of Australia. A further major challenge in addressing climate change is to ensure that economic and technical resources are available to Indigenous communities to respond to the social and environmental challenges created by climate change. Madam Chair, Indigenous people in Australia own and manage a significant proportion of Australian land and waters, and thereby play a crucial role in climate change mitigation measures. Australia's Indigenous Protection Area and other Indigenous-owned or managed land covers 120 million hectares, or roughly 16% of Australia's land mass, much of it in remote parts of the continent. Our involvement is therefore critical to effectively responding to climate change. In Northern Australia, Indigenous people are pursuing opportunities around greenhouse gas abatement through the mitigation of uncontrolled and unmanaged wildfire, which currently represents the primary contributor of greenhouse gas emissions across the north. This approach enables Indigenous peoples to exercise their customary obligations and rights to care for country. It also provides economic opportunity, provides options to stem the migration of people to urban centres, supports the intergenerational transfer of knowledge, as well as the maintenance and continuity of culture and identity. We believe that all efforts to address climate change should, one, seek to maximise opportunities and involvement arising from climate change that are driven and developed by Indigenous communities. Two, respect for Indigenous cultural knowledge and law in the design of climate change measures. And three, to ensure the full participation of Indigenous peoples in the design and delivery of measures to mitigate the impact of climate change, so as to ensure that such measures do not contribute to the further dispossession of Indigenous people from our land and resources, or impact adversely on the cultural traditions, languages, traditional knowledge and traditional food sources of Indigenous communities. Therefore, Madam Chair, we recommend to the Permanent Forum the outcomes and recommendations of the Darwin Workshop on Climate Change, which provides detailed guidance on ensuring Indigenous perspectives on climate change are fully acknowledged. We also note that the Declaration on the Rights of the Indigenous People contains many provisions of direct relevance and importance in developing climate change responses in collaboration with Indigenous peoples. In particular, we note Articles 20, 23, 25, 29 and 32. We recommend that, one, that the United Nations Permanent Forum urge states to fully endorse and adopt the recommendations from the United Nations International Expert Meeting on the Indigenous Peoples and Climate Change in Darwin, Australia, in April 2008. And two, that the United Nations Permanent Forum develop a mechanism through which governments can monitor and report on the impacts of climate change on Indigenous peoples, mindful of our socio-economic limitations and spiritual attachments to land and waters. And three, that the United Nations Permanent Forum urges all states to endorse and give full meaning to the adoption of the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. Thank you, Madam Chair, from the Australian delegation.
Thank you very much. I'd like now to... We have reached the limit of the time limit of our meeting this morning. I'd like to ask the Secretary to make announcements before I conclude the meeting.
Thank you, Madam. The non-governmental organization DOSIP is located in room B across from this conference room, and they provide a whole array of services like translation of your interventions into English, French, Spanish, Russian, and Portuguese. They can help you with interpretation in the course of the side events or informal conversations in the same languages, photocopying, and they are providing other services. I was also asked to remind you that the Indigenous Women and Climate Change is the subject of a side event in Conference Room 1 at 1:15 that is will be held today. Thank you.
Thank you very much. As you are aware, a lot of the people in the speakers list weren't still called. So this afternoon, we are going to have the dialogue with the government. We will first start with the representative of the Indigenous parliamentarians who haven't spoken this morning, the president of the Sami Parliament. And then we will move on to the governments. And if the government delegations have spoken and there's still time left, I will go back to the list again. So if you are in the list, be here this afternoon because I might still be calling on you. So we will try our best to accommodate as much as we can from the list. So we will continue to hear the speakers on item 3 in this conference room in the afternoon, starting with the dialogue with the governments and the parliamentarians. This meeting is adjourned.